To WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. is bleeding jobs at the fastest rate since George W. Bush first took over the White House in 2001. Job cuts were up 41% in September. Total number of jobs cut so far this year, more than 700,000. AT&T is cutting 7,400 more jobs. For 2004, AT&T will have shrunk its workforce by 12,300. There were nearly 108,000 jobs cut by U.S. companies in September.
Thursday was certainly a busy day for Bank of America. At the same time, the number three U.S. bank was announcing job cuts, a completely unrelated lawsuit accusing the company of massive fraud was filed in court. Parmalat announced it is suing the bank to the sum of $10 billion for playing a central role in one of the biggest financial scandals in European history. After it was revealed that a 4 billion euro Bank of America account being held for Parmalat in the Cayman Islands was actually non-existent, the food group dissolved, leaving more than 100,000 Italian investors with worthless stocks and bonds. The bank is accused of fraud in helping disguise Parmalat's finances and blocking internal investigations. In addition, 4,500 employees, amounting to 2.5% of the company's workforce, will be losing their jobs as a result of a merger with Fleet Boston. In a news release, the National Bank says job cuts will not come from workers that deal directly with customers.
Today's presidential debate focuses on domestic policy, and no one is more concerned about the next president's plan for working people than America's labor unions. SEIU launched what it's calling a Heroes Program in 14 battleground states to get out the Kerry vote. Tracy Surprise, member of the SEIU Heroes Program, goes door-to-door talking to people about the issues.
You can talk about the statistics of health care and the number of people who have no health care, but I get to see the faces.
Surprise worked as a full-time nurse before becoming involved in the program.
The United Steelworkers Union will appeal a court ruling denying shutdown benefits to former employees of Republic Technologies International. The court ruled last week that the company was not obliged to offer the 2,500 former employees pensions. The union had argued that the workers who did not have enough service time to qualify for other pension benefits had a contractual expectation that they would be receiving benefits of $1,000 to $2,000 per month. RTI operated in Connecticut, Illinois, New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and after filing for bankruptcy, closed its doors in August 2002. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. While Walmart has become the textbook case on exploiting workers' wages for company profit, that same philosophy does not apply to its CEO. A report by Responsible Wealth shows that Walmart workers average $329 for a 40-hour work week. In contrast, company CEO Lee Scott raked in almost $300,000 a week in 2003. Quite a wage gap for a company currently facing a lawsuit that claims that it pays women 5% less than men, and 30 other lawsuits connected to overtime pay.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
The Hummer. It's not just for driving anymore. Indeed, you can now splash the essence of Hummer all over your body. General Motors, the maker of this massive symbol of automotive macho, has now licensed a new Hummer cologne, calling it the Essence of Adventure, and pricing it as high as $52 for a Hummer-shaped bottle of the stuff. The scent is advertised as being masculine with rugged and adventurous attributes. They go further, promising that this new fragrance embodies all that Hummer is. The Hummer is an absurdly expensive, gas-guzzling, low-performance, high-polluting, gussied-up chunk of automotive junk. What would that smell like? Besides, these days, I see many more women driving these behemoths than men. Forget the masculinity pitch. This thing is turned into a girly car. I suggest they'd do better with a perfume than a cologne. Preferably one with the alluring scent of money. If it's a real man's car you're after, you want the International CXT pickup truck. Weighing 14,500 pounds, reaching 9 feet tall and stretching 21 and a half feet long, you could put a Hummer in the pickup bed of this honker. In fact, this beast will tow 20 tons and has to have air brakes to make it stop. Yet, it's got the luxuries you need, too. Leather seats, wood grain trim, a drop-down DVD player, and whatnot. Speaking of luxury, it gets only 7 miles per gallon, requiring about $130 each time you fill up its 70-gallon diesel tank. Then there's the price tag. Up to $115,000 with all the options. That's pricey, but hey, it's a man's car. As CXT's marketing director says, this is not a soccer mom's vehicle. I can't see the wife picking up groceries with it. This is Jim Hightower saying, in a CXT, you can look down on a Hummer and say, mine's bigger than yours.
Larry King here with a question. You take vitamin E, but are you losing some of it before your body can use it? Well, now there's the advanced protection of Ester E, new from the makers of Ester C. Ester E's breakthrough form protects its antioxidant strength until your body's ready to use it. So, don't lose your E. Do what I do. Take new Ester E. Are you getting advanced protection from your vitamin E?
And now, look for new Ester E where fine vitamins are sold.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can...
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on coast to coast, on radio stations from coast to coast, from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Stay tuned today at the top of the next hour, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Particularly for our listeners in Michigan, there was some question about the Michigan absentee ballot where in one particular county, when you filled in the slot that pointed to John Kerry, it actually registered as a vote for George Bush. We're going to have one of the heads of elections from the state of Michigan on in the next hour. She wants to clear this up for us all. And it looks like, you know, maybe it was just a mistake. And at 1:30 today, 1:30 Eastern time, the bottom of the next hour, Kevin Zeese, the official spokesperson, head of the Nader campaign, insists he's going to take me apart on the air for daring to ask the question of why is Ralph Nader accepting money from Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. He says I don't have a progressive hair on my head, so stick around. We will find out. That said, it is Friday. It is the first hour of our Friday program. It's time for Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, since first became elected to the... let me start over here. In 1991, Bernie Sanders became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years, the United States House of Representatives. He's since been reelected 5 times, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. My congressman, the man I consider to be America's congressman, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It is great to have you here. You were just down on the floor of the House voting a minute ago?
I am still on the floor, and if you hear the phone drop, don't take it personally. I'm just going to cast the vote, and we'll be back.
Okay.
So,
okay,
yeah.
And our number, if callers would like to call in, if you have questions for Bernie, comments for Bernie, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bernie, so much in the news today. Bush concedes there's no WMDs, and now he's changed his rationale for the war to the fact that Saddam was gaming the UN oil for food program. We've got the new report out today on jobs didn't come in quite as well as the Bush administration would hope. What a surprise. You know, conservative economic policies are ripping the country apart. We have more proof of that. This tax bill that was
Congress just passed, this huge giveaway to corporations in Congress. What do you want to talk about here? There's so much
on
the table.
Where do we begin? Where do we begin?
Right.
I think the point, Tom, is I want to talk to those listeners, really, who still have not made up their minds, and there are many. And those listeners, perhaps, who are concerned about Bush but are not enthusiastic about Kerry, those listeners who are maybe giving a thought to voting for Nader. And what I just want to say is, in fact, this is the most important election in our lifetimes. And my concern is not that George Bush is a conservative president. He's not a conservative president. He is a right-wing extremist president who is really undermining almost everything that this country stands for, not only in terms of economic policies, and thereafter, you mentioned some of them. Just, friends, take a look at what is going on around you. We have lost millions of good-paying jobs, and you tell me what kind of jobs are replacing those jobs. Those jobs are, by and large, with some exceptions, low-paying jobs with minimal benefits. The Bureau of Labor Statistics tells us that in the next 10 years, the 10 of the fastest-growing professions in America are, by and large, going to be jobs that require a high school degree, low wages, low benefits. Is that the economic future that you want for your kids and your grandchildren?
You know, Bernie, it seems to me that the biggest scandal that is the least talked about in the mainstream media right now with regard to jobs is that adults, how do you define adults, that people... People your age and mine are competing with our children for the same jobs.
That's right.
Kids fresh out of high school are competing with 40, 50, 60-year-olds for $8, $9 an hour jobs. And
exactly.
That isn't the way it was in America for
No, and take that a step further. We're competing against desperate people in China and India.
Yeah.
Am I going to lay all of the blame for the economic problems of this country on George Bush? No, I'm not. But clearly what he has done is extenuated all of the problems, and he has no solutions to deal with it. In other words, what corporate America is now saying, what the Chamber of Commerce, National Chamber of Commerce guy is saying, he urges American corporations to go abroad.
Yeah.
2.7 million manufacturing jobs lost. We're on the verge of losing information technology jobs, and Bush is supporting outsourcing.
And this
he is supporting cutting overtime pay for 6 million American workers. And Tom, as we have discussed on the show before, and we've had some interesting discussions with some of you callers, I hope very much that folks do not get caught up on what some of these wedge issues are. Yeah, you're going to have a disagreement with Kerry on abortion, on a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, on the gun issue. Although, by the way, these Republicans are lying and lying and lying. You know, I have a copy of an ad, of a pamphlet that the Republicans sent out. You know what it said? It said, if liberals get elected, they're going to ban the Bible. They're going to ban the Bible. Can you believe people saying that?
I know. And the RNC has admitted that they sent that out in two states now.
Yeah.
It's outrageous.
All right, Tom, I'm going to run for 1 second. I'll be back in about 20 seconds. I've got to cast the vote.
Okay. Right, we'll put you on hold there. Bernie, I don't know if he's disconnected or if he's just set the phone down. We'll find out in a minute. President Bush, this is from the Associated Press. And our number, if you'd like to be on, 1-866-889-8894 if you have a question for Bernie. And we've got a couple people on hold. I'll wait until Bernie comes back. He says he's just going to be a few seconds so that he can take your calls. President Bush and his vice president conceded Thursday, this is in the Associated Press, in the clearest terms yet, that Saddam Hussein had no weapons of mass destruction, even as they tried to shift the Iraq war debate to a new issue. Whether the invasion was justified because Saddam was abusing the UN oil for food program. By the way, I might parenthetically add, one of the companies that was gaming the oil for food program apparently was Halliburton. That's a whole other discussion. Bernie, you came in midstream. Bernie, we got three callers stacked up here. Why don't we just go to the phones? 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Sean in Seattle, Washington on the line. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, I got a quick question for you guys. You know, with this job numbers report that came out this morning, 97,000 jobs, not bad, but it's also not really that good. My question to you guys is this: how would a Democratic administration, how would they have handled the attacks of 9/11 and the recession that we were in differently than the Bush administration in terms of, you know, stabilizing the economy and, you know, keeping jobs instead of losing jobs?
Great question.
Well, that's a good question, and obviously it's a long discussion, but let me just make a couple of suggestions. And let's be very clear about this. Everybody in America was horrified by 9/11. There is no person in this country who thinks that we should do anything less but protect all of the American people from terrorism, and that we should fight terrorism as effectively as we can. The truth of the matter is, and I think Tom mentioned this earlier in the program, is that we went to war on false pretenses. The evidence is now clear, and many of us knew it then, that at least the United Nations inspectors should be given more time to determine whether or not there were weapons of mass destruction. Bush said, no, let's go in. He was wrong. They were wrong when they said there were ties between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. That turns out also not to be true. They were very ill-prepared for the occupation. And you have Mr. Bremer just saying last week that they needed more troops. They shouldn't have allowed that looting, which got us off to a terrible start. So the key issue, I think, is that to understand that international terrorism, which is what we are up against, must be confronted internationally. It cannot only be done by the United States. We need an international effort. Bush has more than any president in the modern history of America antagonized and alienated not only our allies but people in the developing world against the United States.
Right, but Bernie,
it's going to be harder to deal with the war on terrorism in that context.
But Bernie, to bring that back to Sean's question, I mean, he was essentially parroting the Republican line that we lost the jobs because of the attack on 9/11 and this recession, you know, the recession that they say that Bush
inherited. I don't know that he was saying that, but if he was saying that, then the other thing is, the president himself said after 9/11, this is after 9/11, he said, look, if we give these huge tax breaks to the rich and large corporations, it's going to create millions of new jobs.
7 million new jobs, yeah.
Yeah.
And it hasn't. Yeah, and
it
hasn't. And so his question about how the Democrats would do it differently or progressives would do it differently, you're not a Democrat, I'm not a Democrat, but, you know, how would...
For a start, instead of number one, you got to deal with this outsourcing issue. I consider this to be one of the major economic crises facing this country.
Yeah.
So in other words, you're going to have to say, I'm sorry, corporate America, you can't run to China, throw American workers out on the street, simply bring your products back. That in itself is a huge issue. Second of all, in order to raise wages in America, you're going to raise the minimum wage so that working people have more money to spend. You're going to target your tax breaks not to the rich, but to the middle class. You're going to, instead of giving tax breaks to multinationals, you're going to help small and medium-sized businesses expand in America. Those companies that want to create jobs here rather than run to China. Those are a few things,
yeah.
I think that we can
do. I think there's some very, very clear differences, Sean, and thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom and Bernie. I guess I'd like to ask Bernie for his comment. I don't know if he knows who Larry Kudlow is. He's a guy that appears some of these talk shows, and they were I think
representing the investor class.
Exactly. And you probably saw the same show. That was Lou Dobbs, wasn't it?
No, it was last night, Chris Matthews,
excuse me. Well, anyway, the point Kudlow made, and it sounded pretty heartless, was that, you know, globalization is a fact, and we have to outsource. That's just the way it is. Now, I must say, though, as a person who certainly sympathizes with the working class, even though I'm not working right now, I'm also a consumer, and it certainly is true that as American consumers, we're kind of put in the dilemma of, well, okay, we want Americans to have these jobs. But on the other hand, if they do outsource and this work can be done for a cheaper price, then they send the products back here. And for people that have a lower income, of course, the prices will be lower. And, you know, if you don't have a job and you want to look for the best buy, that really is a dilemma, isn't it?
This is
it
the
is,
circular
but it's,
line.
Here's the dilemma, Rick. As we become poorer and poorer, what you're really saying is people lose good-paying jobs. If they have less money, they have to buy cheaper and cheaper products because they have no choice.
Right.
So I would broadly answer your concern by saying I would much rather live in an economy where people had decent paying jobs with adequate health care, and if they had to pay a few cents more for a product, I think that that in the long run is a lot better. Second of all, while it is true certainly that some products coming back into this country are cheaper, I have seen instances where with our sophisticated technology, we can also produce products at quite reasonable prices. But the bottom line is, in my view, we should not be engaged in a race to the bottom, destroying good-paying jobs in order to save a few cents on a product that we may be buying.
Amen. Rick, thanks for that call. Thank you, Bernie. 20 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a quick break here. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to speak with Congressman Bernie Sanders, stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
This Sunday on Bravo, you won't believe what the stars are saying on the 10th anniversary season of Inside the Actors Studio.
What turns you on?
I can't tell you that.
This Sunday, Jennifer Lopez. It's everything you wanted to know and the questions you're dying to ask.
Shall we ignore Geely?
Let's not ignore it. Let's talk about it.
Plus, in the weeks ahead, James Gandolfini, Robert Redford, and George Carlin. James Lipton hosts an all-new Inside the Actors Studio with Jennifer Lopez. This Sunday at 8, 7 Central, only on Bravo.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Four minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, our guest this hour, and as he is every Friday, our regular Brunch with Bernie. And Bernie, Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico, is on the line. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hey there. I just discovered the most insidious form of outsourcing I've ever seen, and I think most people don't know about it. Basically, what's happening is because of the Internet and the fact that you can email things around, there is a company that's based both in India and I think has an affiliate in Russia that they call Coders for Hire. And what they do is they basically spam everybody that they think might be a programmer, a technical person in America, and get them to actually work on overseas projects, which initially look kind of good, except for one thing. They provide absolutely no health care. They provide absolutely no benefits. But what they do is they get all these people working for them, which means they can undercompete small American businesses like the one that I have. And what happens is that the intellectual property, the patents and all that other stuff flow over to India, where we basically have almost nothing we can do to enforce intellectual property. And the next thing we know, we're competing against ourselves. We can't make any money, and we lose our people. They lose their benefits. They make half what we pay them.
Chuck, you're saying that there's an Indian company that is soliciting part-time Americans to work over the Internet for, as if they were in India, but working and then selling their services to American companies. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct.
What are your thoughts on that, Bernie?
Well, I mean, I think it's an outrage. And I think Chuck makes a couple of very important points, and he's right in saying that we don't talk about this enough. We do talk about the fact that there are studies out there which show that millions of decent-paying American information technology jobs could be lost outsourcing to India and other countries. What we don't talk about, among other things, is the pressure of outsourcing on wages and benefits for those jobs that remain in America. And what you're going to see is wage cuts and cuts in benefits in order to make American companies that are staying here competitive with India, where people are working in some cases for not for half price, but for one-tenth the wages that American workers
make. You're absolutely right, Congressman. I mean, it's the pressure that we get from the people that we have worked for years and years and years.
Right.
I mean, companies that we have had contracts for years. And the thing is, on top of that, I guess the point that I didn't make clear is what happens is when these people start working for these overseas companies via the Internet, our intellectual property, the thing that actually makes us competitive and allows us to provide a living wage and benefits, that intellectual property flows overseas too.
That's exactly right. And again, when we talk about the economy, and we had a call a few minutes ago, what we're going to do about it, if you do not address this issue of outsourcing, not just blue collar, but as Chuck says, information technology, intellectual property rights, we ain't going to have much of an economic future in this country. Chuck is absolutely right. Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah, and then thank you, Chuck. Bernie, historically, the way that we dealt with this with goods was with tariffs. We said, you know, if there's a dollar's worth of labor and a pair of tennis shoes made in the United States, and that same pair of tennis shoes made in Malaysia only has 10 cents worth of labor in it, then when you import those tennis shoes, there's a 90-cent tariff when it comes in to equalize the labor costs so that, you know, you can still make them in Malaysia, but it's going to cost you the same in terms of your labor costs.
Right.
And we had tariffs like that from 1787 up until, you know, Ronald Reagan started dismantling them, and then Bill Clinton really took it apart with NAFTA and GATT and whatnot. And now, you know, of course, Bush is pushing this like crazy. How do we do that with labor that is so fungible, that can so easily transmit over the web?
Well, you're right. It is the fact that we're not just dealing with hard merchandise makes it harder. But I think we've got to start having to look at what we call a social tariff. And that means if you're laying off an American information technology worker who's making $20 an hour and you hire somebody in India who's making $2 an hour. We have got to, in one way or another, address that disparity. It's what we call a social tariff.
Yeah, there have to be ways to do it. There absolutely have to be ways
to
do
it. But it is more complicated than just the old goods.
Yeah. Thank you. 29 minutes past the hour, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the real free speech zone. Stick around. We'll be right back. Our number 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in.
This Sunday, everything's wild. Bravo premieres a whole new round of Celebrity Poker Showdown. And the burning question is, what are the nuts? Matthew Perry.
Well, that's a very private question, isn't it?
Cheryl Hines.
How dare you?
Chevy Chase.
What are my choices?
Dave Navarro.
I don't want to go there.
Macaulay Culkin.
The nuts is the unbeatable man. That's kind of what I'm looking for.
Dave Foley hosts the all-new Celebrity Poker Showdown, premiering this Sunday at 9, 8 Central, only on Bravo.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. is bleeding jobs at the fastest rate since George W. Bush first took over the White House in 2001. Job cuts were up 41% in September. Total number of jobs cut so far this year, more than 700,000. AT&T is cutting 7,400 more jobs. For 2004, AT&T will have shrunk its workforce by 12,300. There were nearly 108,000 jobs cut by U.S. companies in September.
Thursday was certainly a busy day for Bank of America. At the same time, the number three U.S. bank was announcing job cuts, a completely unrelated lawsuit accusing the company of massive fraud was filed in court. Parmalat announced it is suing the bank to the sum of $10 billion for playing a central role in one of the biggest financial scandals in European history, after it was revealed that a 4 billion euro Bank of America account being held for Parmalat in the Cayman Islands was actually non-existent. The food group dissolved, leaving more than 100,000 Italian investors with worthless stocks and bonds. The bank is accused of fraud in helping disguise Parmalat's finances and blocking internal investigations. In addition, 4,500 employees, amounting to 2.5% of the company's workforce, will be losing their jobs as a result of a merger with Fleet Boston. In a news release, the National Bank says job cuts will not come from workers that deal directly with customers.
Today's presidential debate focuses on domestic policy, and no one is more concerned about the next president's plan for working people than America's labor unions. SEIU launched what it's calling a Heroes Program in 14 battleground states to get out the Kerry vote. Tracy Surprise, member of the SEIU Heroes Program, goes door-to-door talking to people about the issues.
You can talk about the statistics of health care and the number of people who have no health care, but I get to see the faces.
Surprise worked as a full-time nurse before becoming involved in the program.
The United Steelworkers Union will appeal a court ruling denying shutdown benefits to former employees of Republic Technologies International. The court ruled last week that the company was not obliged to offer the 2,500 former employees pensions. The union had argued that the workers who did not have enough service time to qualify for other pension benefits had a contractual expectation that they would be receiving benefits of $1,000 to $2,000 per month. RTI operated in Connecticut, Illinois, New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and after filing for bankruptcy, closed its doors in August 2002. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. While Walmart has become the textbook case on exploiting workers' wages for company profit, that same philosophy does not apply to its CEO. A report by Responsible Wealth shows that Walmart workers average $329 for a 40-hour work week. In contrast, company CEO Lee Scott raked in almost $300,000 a week in 2003. Quite a wage gap for a company currently facing a lawsuit that claims that it pays women 5% less than men, and 30 other lawsuits connected to overtime pay.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here, before the hour, rather. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman Bernie Sanders on the line with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. Our number 1-866-889-8894. And Bill in Tinmouth, Vermont, near Randolph, Vermont, is on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. The question I have for Bernie is what his record is on dealing with the illegal invasion of this country by an awful lot of people coming in from every direction, mostly across the southwestern border, and the effects of this invasion on the minimum wage, the supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
Get a lot of people in here working for nothing. The minimum wage goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's you could call it, some people on the radio call it insourcing. We're losing millions of jobs a year to people who come in and take most of the low-paying jobs.
Right. So we got it, Bill. So what should we do about that, Bernie?
Bill raises a very good question. You know, a couple of years ago, Tom, I was wondering why extreme right-wing folks who one would think would be very much against illegal immigration almost believe in an open immigration policy.
Yeah, you got Bush saying, let's amnesty and all this stuff. And,
right, and you know, people like Dick Armey and so forth being ultra-liberal, open the doors.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is just what Bill indicated. If you have a large influx of people into this country who are desperate, who are poor, who are prepared to work for nothing, clearly that is going to lower wages and lower our standard of living. I think the answer to the question is a very simple one. It's just what Bill indicated. If you have a large influx of people into this country who are desperate, who are poor, who are prepared to work for nothing, clearly that is going to lower wages and lower our standard of living. I think the answer to the question is a very simple one. We need, I believe, in immigration. My father came from Poland, almost everybody who listens, mother or father came from someplace, or grandparents came from someplace. But we need to have a consistent, rational immigration policy. And we have got to be firm against illegal immigration. Illegal immigration is illegal. That's it.
Yeah.
And we've got to do everything that we can to stop it for, among other things, the reasons that Bill gave. And that is something that we are working on.
Okay, well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ann in Byron Center, Michigan on the line. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, sorry to rain on your parade there. If you only got 2 hours, you liberals only got 2 hours. So I'm sorry, but I'm neither Democrat or Republican. And now I'm thinking I'm not even independent. I just vote my conscience. And I'm sick and tired of
Congressman Sanders, if he knows about the problems in Ohio with the Secretary of State Blackwell, who's a Republican, who at the 11th hour has now issued a directive to all the boards of elections that they cannot issue a provisional ballot to a voter that claims they're registered unless they can determine that they're registered in that precinct. Does Congressman Sanders think that violates the spirit of the Help America Vote Act?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I don't have all of the details on that, but that sounds to me to be improper and in violation of the spirit of trying to make sure that people who are eligible to vote are able to vote.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Well,
that's an important. Tom, I got cut off for a second when that previous caller was on the line, and I wish we could have dialogued a little bit with her about the role that Bush is playing. And I think it is appropriate not to demagogue against Bush, but to just look at the facts. I would like to talk to her. How do you defend the president who today has lost jobs, the first president since Herbert Hoover, who wants to cut 6 million Americans off of overtime, who has not once said a word about raising the minimum wage, who supports outsourcing? I would love to talk to some Republicans who want to call up and tell us why they think Bush should be reelected based on that record.
Well, in that case, Ann, thanks a lot, Barbara, for the call. In that case, Ann, feel free to call back, 1-866-889-8894. My experience, Bernie, has been very often I'll have conservatives who call in and they'll take an issue. And they want to discuss an issue, but then there are folks who just want to yell, basically. And the yellers, I tend not to put up with.
That's right.
The issue folks, I'm willing to talk to. But you're right. We should have asked Ann. What issue are you actually complaining
about?
Yeah.
I mean, the point is, I do not blame Bush for every problem this country faces. That would be absurd. There have been long-term economic trends that Bush inherited. But what we have a right to ask is to say, okay, if outsourcing is a problem, what are you doing about it?
Yeah.
And he supports it. You know, if the loss of manufacturing jobs is a problem, what are you doing about it? Nothing. If pensions, you know, one of the issues that we don't talk about enough, we've been working really hard on it. Millions of workers have seen cuts in their pensions. their dreams of a secure retirement out the window. What is Bush doing about it? He's doing the wrong things. Gap between the rich and the poor. Is it good that we're seeing an increase in poverty while at the same time the wealthiest people in America make it out like bandits, so we give them tax breaks? Those are the issues that we should be talking about. There are two sides to every issue, but I would like to hear some folks defend that agenda.
Yeah, good point. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And, Ann, if you want to take any issue at all in Byron Center, Michigan, give us a call back. And my apologies for cutting you off. Alan in Columbus, Ohio's on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Yes, in the last debate, I remember Bush, he said that there's like over 100 Iraqi companies on the New York Stock Exchange. And I was just wondering how many of those companies are owned by Americans.
You know, Brian?
That's a good question. I just don't know the answer.
Yeah,
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, a good question. I think a larger question, Bernie, is the problem that Iraqi companies have right now trying to get work with these billions of American dollars that are flowing in rebuilding Iraq when we won't hire Iraqi companies.
No, that is exactly right.
We're just giving the money to buddies of Bush.
That is exactly right. Certainly one of the areas that we are failing in terms of the reconstruction of Iraq is dealing with a very serious and high unemployment rates, and that has to do with the fact that Iraqi companies are not able to be hiring substantial amounts of Iraqis because a lot of that business is being done by American firms.
Yeah. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tony, welcome.
Hey, Tom. I just got a question for the congressman about, I heard they're trying to reform the Patriot Act or
yes.
Try to get rid of it, I hope.
Yeah.
What exactly is going on with that?
Okay. Well, I voted against the Patriot Act and introduced the first legislation that would amend some of the more onerous aspects of that bill. That had to deal with Section 215, which gives the government basically the right to monitor your reading habits in libraries and bookstores without any probable cause or with evidence that you may be associated with terrorism. Bottom line is that we offered an amendment to repeal that government, basically, the right to monitor your reading habits in libraries and bookstores without any probable cause or with evidence that you may be associated with terrorism. Bottom line is that we offered an amendment to repeal that section at the end of the 17 minutes of voting period. We had the votes to defeat it. Tom DeLay and the Republicans kept the voting rolls open another 20 minutes, managed to defeat us by a 210-210 tie. Some of these provisions are going to be sunsetted, which means they will be repealed unless Congress votes affirmatively to reestablish them. We're going to do everything that we can to make sure that does not happen. We have a lot of support from some conservatives, progressives, people who understand that, yes, we have got to be vigorous in fighting terrorism, but we don't have to do it in a way that undermines a basic American constitutional right. So I am optimistic that we are going to take out some of the more onerous aspects of the USA Patriot Act on this.
Please try to listen to you. Because there's so many problems in the USA, you are so right. What are you doing about it? What's George doing about it? Not much right now. But we are in a fight for our lives with them Muslim extremists. They want to kill us. They want to ruin our Western world, don't they? Am I wrong?
Bernie?
Let me respond to that. And I'm sorry, I was cut off for a second, Tom. What is the name of the caller?
This is Ann. This is Ann who had called before, who I dropped her off the line.
Okay. Ann, stay on the phone for a minute.
You got it.
Okay, good.
I want to hear what you got to say.
Yeah, good. And let's dialogue.
You need to help me.
Okay. Here's the story. You're absolutely right. There are enormous problems facing our country, and one of them is the fight with international terrorism. And you are absolutely right. There are some fanatical religious Muslims who, in fact, would blow you up if they could. No question about it.
Okay.
The question is, and is both domestically and in terms of fighting terrorism, I think you will agree with me that we want to be as smart as we can. Is that right? We want to be smart. We want to win this war.
Yeah, I want to know why 20 years ago we didn't secure our borders.
Well, and you're going all over. I mean, a lot of issues out there, but securing our borders was not what 9/11 was about.
Well, no, but it's one of the things that everybody's squawking about.
Well, it's not. No, it's a different thing. I mean, illegal immigrants coming in from Mexico is something different than somebody hijacking a plane.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue, even getting into that one, I think we can recognize in general we have not done historically a good enough job in fighting, being aware of Al-Qaeda and fighting international terrorism without casting any kinds of blames.
Okay.
But here's the point right now. You cannot fight terrorism, in my view, effectively if all over this world, Ann, people are more and more angry and hateful toward the United States. Because what's going to happen is you're going to have 10-year-old children in Pakistan who are growing up to hate us, who are prepared to be suicide bombers.
They hated us for a long time. France hates us because we liberated them. We saved them.
No.
The Germans.
And, no, I don't think France hates. Okay, the record there, Ann, is, and stay on with me, and don't believe everything you hear on right-wing radio.
I'm trying to go middle down the road.
Germany doesn't hate us. What you have seen in the last 3 or 4 years is a huge decline in support, not only in France and Germany, but all over Europe, all over Scandinavia, all over the world. And that is because people throughout the world say the United States thinks they can do anything they want. They don't have to listen to the United Nations. They don't have to listen to the rest of the world. And I think that's dangerous, Ann.
I do, too.
Because we can't fight terrorism all by ourselves.
I'm tired of being everybody's police dog.
Okay. Well, Ann, thank you. We may have a disagreement on that, but thank you for your thoughts.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not talking about
it. There's all different people.
No, it sounds like you're saying the same thing. I think Ann said we can't be everybody's police dog.
No, I don't want to be.
No, we can't. We have to work with everybody. And one of the criticisms of Bush that I think is a valid one is he's not working well with other countries.
Okay.
All right, I hope we made some sense to you.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thanks for the call, Ann. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Steve in Syracuse, New York on the line. Steve, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Congress, or good afternoon, something like that.
Yep.
I have a question about, my wife is active duty military. She's currently at a recruiting center here, and we don't have a base around. And we got a notice in the mail last week from TRICARE.
Yes.
That said that we can no longer use the VA hospital. Do you know anything about that, Congressman?
And there is no base near you for your wife to go to? Is that what you're saying?
No base for her or I.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I don't know about your personal situation. It sounds wrong to me. You should have some place to go to get your health care. I would give your local member of Congress a ring and see if he or she can help you. Sometimes they can.
Okay.
But that does not seem right.
You're part of our area also because she actually covers Vermont also in her job.
Give my office a ring, and we will do what we can. We deal with issues like this all of the time, but that does not seem right.
Right. Well, they said that they had cut back the thing because we make too much money. If you make a certain amount of money now.
Oh, this is the new Bush cutback, Bernie.
Well, this is another what we do know, and I don't know if this affects your case, is last year Bush threw 160,000 veterans, not active duty, off of VA health care because their incomes in some cases were above $25,000 a year. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, because I'm actually not supposed to be talking this way because I'm reserve, I'm a truck driver, I watch NASCAR and listen to country music, so I'm not supposed to be a...
You're supposed to be a liar
anyway,
right?
But that's the basic case, is we make too much money.
Yeah. Well, let me just say a word on that, and I hope some other veterans and active guard people are listening. Regardless of one's position on the war, everybody that I know, and I oppose this war, understands that the people who put their lives on the line defending this country deserve the benefits and the health care that were promised to them. There's no debate about that. And it outrages me and millions of Americans that this president could give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest 1%, and then last year threw 160,000 veterans off of VA health care because, quote-unquote, they were too wealthy, which means in some cases, for a single person, they made more than $25,000 a year. And right now in Vermont and all over this country, there are waiting lines at VA hospitals and clinics when people walk in because the VA is grossly underfunded. That is not the way you treat people who put their lives on the line defending this country. That's an issue where we're going to make some changes.
Yeah, this is wrong. Steve, thanks for the call. We've only got about a minute left here. David in North Carolina. David, can you make it quick?
Yeah, Senator, Congressman Bernie, my question has to deal with the FMCSA, the Federal Motor Carrier, and the new rules on truck driving. When is somebody going to put some legislation in there that deals with the real problem of truck driving, and it's the shippers and receivers tying up drivers for 6, 8, 10, 12 hours at storage facilities instead of the issues of driving?
Good question. David, well, Congressman Sanders will have to answer that after this break. I'm sorry, the tyranny of the clock here.
Not a problem.
Okay, great. Keep on listening. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir!
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaire!
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to wear.
Farmers in 17th century New England struck a steady balance between their community and the market, according to a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Market forces dominate agriculture along with most other aspects of American life, too much so in the opinion of environmental historian Brian Donahue. He's written a new book called The Great Meadow, Farmers and the Land in Colonial Concord. Donahue says the market began to exert a heavy influence in 18th century New England. He says farmers were pulled by two competing forces. One was the traditional mixed husbandry of English family farms, raising livestock, crops, vegetables, fruit, and firewood. Farmers grew what the family needed, and maybe a little extra to take to market. The other force was the growing opportunity to earn profits by specializing in a few crops or commodities to sell. Donahue says it was agriculture as a way of life versus agriculture as a business, but he says Concord farmers maintained a balance between these forces houses through the 1600s. He says they managed their property with a sense of responsibility to their families and their community. These colonial farmers did manage a healthy level of economic growth while farming for many generations on the same land. Donahue concludes that this sustainable agriculture was framed by a number of social restraints, including responsibility to one's family, neighbors, and community, and the fact that most of what they needed had to be produced locally. Donahue says these early Americans had their faults, and he wouldn't endorse their Puritan social restraints, but he says the colonial farmers did manage to strike a balance between the market and their community, a balance he says has been lost over the last 200 years. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Up and we have lost Congressman Sanders. However, welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. My guess is that, in fact, one of our lines just rang that may well be Bernie. So we'll see. Yeah, it is. Sure enough, you got to release the line. There we go. Hey, Bernie, welcome back.
Okay.
Apparently, the line had dropped you. I'm sorry. Wasn't Richard really pointing up or was it David in North Carolina? I guess it was the issue of truckers. That this is really part of this whole problem of the Bush administration, or the conservatives in general, pushing the idea of absolute deregulation, that the government has no business protecting people.
Point,
go ahead.
I wish I could tell David I had more detail, but in general, the Bush administration kind of thinks that we should have no protection for truck drivers, that companies can do pretty much whatever they want, and I think David is talking about some of the repercussions of that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's substantial. Bernie, you've come in on a different line. I'm going to try and conference. Hopefully, we won't lose you here. Let's see how this works. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number, and Richard in Grand Rapids. You guys should be talking to each other. Hey, Richard.
Good afternoon, Tom. Congressman, can I call you Bernie?
Sure.
Bernie, were you on the floor when I think it was Representative Tom Ryan of Ohio, it might be Tim Ryan, made his remarks about the war?
I don't know.
There
have been so many.
Remembered it because the video is making is out on the web right now. I saw it on the johncarry.com blog this morning, and it's just an amazing speech of about a minute and 20, minute 30 seconds duration that says, I think it's important for everybody who can hear this to hear it. It was a remarkable speech. The other thing I wanted to make, I consider Salon.com to be a fairly reputable website, and they're running a story this morning saying that Bush may have been wearing an earpiece during the debate last week. And if that's true, it's an amazing story and a huge story.
And they have the photos to prove it.
To be a cheater in a way that every American can understand.
Yeah.
Well, I honestly don't know the answer to that. I don't know any more than you.
Right, I wouldn't expect you did. I just brought it up because...
But what I know...
I think Salon is a pretty reputable
site. Just the other night, Dick Cheney was there saying, gee, I never met John Edwards, and the next morning there are papers all over this country are pictures of the two of them together.
Sure.
These guys, unfortunately, lie a lot. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, a leaflet is going out throughout the South, Arkansas, I think, saying that liberals are going to ban the Bible. And you know, I think that is just an outrage.
It's just another example of this sort of thing. Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Richard, thanks for the call. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us today, Bernie.
Okay.
And we will see you next week. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And don't forget, in our next hour, we're going to have a senior election official with the state of Michigan talking about the Michigan ballot, where the ballot that was mailed out, the absentee ballot, where if you voted for Kerry, it would be recorded for Bush, and a fellow from the Nader campaign. Should be very interesting. Stick around.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. is bleeding jobs at the fastest rate since George W. Bush first took over the White House in 2001. Job cuts were up 41% in September. Total number of jobs cut so far this year, more than 700,000. AT&T is cutting 7,400 more jobs. For 2004, AT&T will have shrunk its workforce by 12,300. There were nearly 108,000 jobs cut by U.S. companies in September.
Thursday was certainly a busy day for Bank of America. At the same time, the number three U.S. bank was announcing job cuts, a completely unrelated lawsuit accusing the company of massive fraud was filed in court. Parmalat announced it is suing the bank to the sum of $10 billion for playing a central role in one of the biggest financial scandals in European history, after it was revealed that a 4 billion euro Bank of America account being held for Parmalat in the Cayman Islands was actually non-existent. The food group dissolved, leaving more than 100,000 Italian investors with worthless stocks and bonds. The bank is accused of fraud in helping disguise Parmalat's finances and blocking internal investigations. In addition, 4,500 employees, amounting to 2.5% of the company's workforce, will be losing their jobs as a result of a merger with Fleet Boston. In a news release, the National Bank says job cuts will not come from workers that deal directly with customers.
Today's presidential debate focuses on domestic policy, and no one is more concerned about the next president's plan for working people than America's labor unions. SEIU launched what it's calling a Heroes Program in 14 battleground states to get out the Kerry vote. Tracy Surprise, member of the SEIU Heroes Program, goes door to door talking to people about the issues.
You can talk about the statistics of health care and the number of people who have no health care, but I get to see the faces.
Surprise worked as a full-time nurse before becoming involved in the program.
The United Steelworkers Union will appeal a court ruling denying shutdown benefits to former employees of Republic Technologies International. The court ruled last week that the company was not obliged to offer the 2,500 former employees pensions. The union had argued that the workers who did not have enough service time to qualify for other pension benefits had a contractual expectation that they would be receiving benefits of $1,000 to $2,000 per month. RTI operated in Connecticut, Illinois, New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and after filing for bankruptcy, closed its doors in August 2002. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. While Walmart has become the textbook case on exploiting workers' wages for company profit, that same philosophy does not apply to its CEO. A report by Responsible Wealth shows that Walmart workers average $329 for a 40-hour work week. In contrast, company CEO Lee Scott raked in almost $300,000 a week in 2003. Quite a wage gap for a company currently facing a lawsuit that claims that it pays women 5% less than men, and 30 other lawsuits connected to overtime pay.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Governor Jeb Bush is out to make his state of Florida the next Florida. In 2000, Jeb used such crude political tactics as illegally purging voter lists to help engineer his brother's 537-vote victory in that election. And now, here he goes again. As one peer of Florida's GOP establishment candidly puts it, A Democrat can't win a statewide election in Florida without a high turnout of African Americans. It's no secret that the name of the game for Republicans is to restrain that turnout as much as possible. The Orlando League of Voters can attest to that. This African-American civic group has played a big role in turning Orlando from a Republican stronghold into a city that increasingly votes Democratic. Their reward for getting involved in the Democratic process is to have Jeb Bush's state police suddenly come knock, knock, knocking on the doors of some 50 of the league's grassroots leaders. These leaders, mostly elderly black women, find it frightening to be confronted in their homes by armed troopers interrogating them about their electoral participation. They're not charged with any crime. Instead, police say they're investigating vague allegations that some voter fraud might have occurred in this spring's mayoral election. Yet Jeb's own state police honcho wrote in a May letter that, quote, there was no basis to support the allegations, and he declared this matter closed. But it has not closed. Police now say the chief's letter was poorly worded, and the intimidating in-home interrogations continue this summer as the presidential election heated up. Jeb's police action is creating a blanket of fear among the league's volunteers who worry that their perfectly legal efforts will land them in jail. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course Jeb says that there's no political motive involved, but when asked how long the Orlando investigation will go on, police say it might continue right through November 2nd.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Yesterday on this program, we talked about the, briefly actually, in fact, I put it out more as a question. I'm holding in my hand a copy of the one of the county ballots in the state of Michigan, in which the absentee ballot, and which are optically scanned, and so there's these half arrows, these broken arrows, and you fill in the arrow to point to your candidate, and you fill in the arrow that points to the Republican Party, and you can vote a straight ticket, and so on, Democratic Party, vote a straight ticket. When it gets down to the presidential part, if you fill in the arrow that points to the name John Kerry, if you count the arrows, it actually gets counted as a vote for George W. Bush. And a lot of people saw this as a conspiracy. Some people were very upset about this. We're on the air in 2 radio stations in Michigan, as well as radio stations all across the United States. And several election officials in the area around WSDS in Ann Arbor and WTKG in Grand Rapids, and WSDS reaches all the way to Detroit, actually, contacted some of their local election officials. And one of those people was kind enough, Mary Hollenrake, who's the county clerk for Kent County, which is where Grand Rapids is located, and I might add where I was born, to call me up and set me straight. And so I wanted to give Mary a chance to share with all of you what happened. Hey, Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Mary, what happened?
Well, Tom, Michigan has 5,300 precincts, and this printing error on this absentee ballot occurred in one of our 5,300 precincts. It was a small community in Michigan north of Grand Rapids, and it strictly was a printing error. Less than 70 absentee ballots were sent out in the mail or picked up by people wishing to get an absentee ballot in this community in Gratiot County, and the error was discovered. As soon as the error was discovered, and it was merely a printing error, it was corrected immediately. The ballots were reprinted, and procedures were set in motion that will not allow anyone to vote twice. I mean, of course, those bad ballots, as we could term them, will not be counted, and no ballots have been counted at this moment because we haven't arrived at Election Day yet. But less than 70 ballots went out, all were corrected, and no future bad ballots went out, and no other precincts in the state of Michigan were involved. Michigan is the most decentralized state in the nation for running elections. Mm-hmm. It is not run by the Secretary of State. The 83 county clerks print their ballots, and the elections are administered by 2,400 election officials in Michigan. That is the only state that handles the elections in such a decentralized manner.
Yeah, I think that's extraordinary. Mary, let's just talk about this issue for a moment, if you don't mind.
Sure.
In Florida and in Texas, in the 2000 and the 2002 elections, there were literally hundreds of documented cases involving at least several dozen electronic voting machines where they had the electronic voting machine equivalent of this ballot. They called them misaligned touchscreens. In every case, in Florida, for example, the space that you would have to push to cause the machine to record a vote for Jeb Bush's opponent was an empty space off to the right. And the voting machine company, after the election, I mean, these votes all got tabulated as Jeb Bush votes, no matter what. That was, you know, end of discussion, because there's no paper trail, there's no way to audit them. And the voting machines company said this was a misaligned touchscreen. Same thing happened in Texas, many cases of this. In all cases, these were in favor of the Republicans, as was this one. There is this pervasive paranoia in America about this sort of thing happening. That said, at the same time, anybody who listens to this program regularly knows that I am absolutely an advocate of the people in our government who are trying to hold our government together, trying to hold our democracy together and our institutions of democracy, and that in fact I'm strongly opposed to the largely conservative government bashers. These people are, oh, government is the problem, and, you know, corporations will solve all the problems, and get rid of government. I think government, people like you who work for government, you represent we the people. You are us, of course. You're a member. I mean, you know, here you are, a citizen of the United States, a member, a resident of Kent County, but you're also the local representative of we the people and responsive to we the people. And I really appreciate your being that responsive and calling me and coming on this program. How are your peers handling this? What kind of feedback are you getting from the field? And how do you think that we, you know, as a nation or as a state, I mean, if you want to keep it at the local level, we should be responding to the possible politicization,
but I understand.
Yeah, of our voting process, or by people, perhaps in the electronic voting machines. Of course, these are not government employees; these are corporations. There are some big issues here. What's the kind of feedback that you're getting? What are your thoughts on that, if you don't mind my asking?
Certainly. Obviously, whenever there is a problem with a voting system or a problem of perception out there in the community, the state, the nation at large, we election officials get very concerned because we take this very seriously. It is one of our most serious, if not at this time of the year, it is my most serious task at this moment is to pull off, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but it is to get the federal election run smoothly, efficiently, without disenfranchising anyone who shows up at the polls or who wants to vote in an absentee ballot manner on November 2nd. I mean, that is our highest duty at the moment, and I hold many positions. I am the clerk of the court. I am the register of deeds. I am the keeper of vital records. But at this moment, our main focus is on running the smoothest, problem-free, everyone come on down and vote, join this party, and I don't mean a political party, mm-hmm. I mean the wonderful...
The democracy party.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I am out there on the front lines promoting, get more people signed up to vote. Michigan is having record-breaking absentee ballot registrations. We're over 7 million. Kent County is hitting the 400,000 registered voters. We will have a very long, tedious, exciting day on November 2nd. I won't leave here until the next morning at 6:30 or so in the morning.
Holy cow.
At 8:30 that morning. We, registered voters, we will have a very long, tedious, exciting day on November 2nd. I won't leave here until the next morning at 6:30 or so in the morning.
Holy cow.
At 8:30 that morning. In effect, this is a sacred trust to us.
Yeah.
I am elected as a partisan person, but most of the city election officials in our state are not elected. Are appointed. I don't even know how the city of Grand Rapids clerk will vote. We are very close friends, and we work together every single day on this election. I don't have a clue as to how Terry Hegarty will vote in this election. I don't have a clue as to how my elections director will vote in this election. Are appointed. I don't even know how the city of Grand Rapids clerk will vote. We are very close friends, and we work together every single day on this election. I don't have a clue as to how Terry Hegarty will vote in this election. I don't have a clue as to how my elections director will vote in this election, because they do not talk about it in terms of partisan politics here in Kent County and mostly through the state of Michigan. Michigan has a different set of...
Give you a chance to finish your sentence. And if anybody from Michigan wants to call in or anywhere else in the country about this issue, feel free. Our number 1-866-889-8894. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have on Kevin Zeese of the Nader campaign, who is going to tell us why I'm wrong to suggest that there is something wrong with Ralph Nader taking money from people who donate to the Swift Boat Veterans, the Swift Boat Veterans for Nader now group, apparently. So we'll see. Do we have Mary back on? Mary?
Yes.
Hey, Mary. This phone line has been flaky all morning. I'm at 8894. A telephone number, by the way. Here, George Bush now changing the reason why we went to war in Iraq to the fact that that Saddam was gaming the oil for food program. What's interesting, what I thought was particularly interesting about this report, was that the names of the companies in China and France and many other countries that were participating in the oil for food program with Saddam were published in the report. However, the names of the companies in the United States, which presumably would include Halliburton, which did $87 million worth of business with Iraq, under Dick Cheney's tutelage as CEO, were blacked out. And I think this would be, very interesting. It would be to see the actual names of the company. But anyhow, George Bush now changing the rationale for war, for the war in Iraq. And at the same time, we're having a situation of, as they say, deepening hostility against the United States. All Arab, this from Charles Dilfer's note, he said, Mohammed Ahmad, the editor-in-chief of the semi-official Al-Maswar magazine, this from the Middle East, all Arab and Muslim people are convinced that U.S. President George W. Bush is persecuting Muslims and Arabs and is targeting only the Arab world, he says. And the report also reinforces the feeling among many Arabs and Muslims that the Americans can never be impartial. They can never be honest partners in the peace process or any political process for that matter, Ahmed added. And this, he said, increases tensions and hatreds. The whole Arab world hates America and the Bush administration. If this guy is right,
He's the deputy director of the Abrams Center for Political and Strategic Studies and former correspondent for the El Aram Daily. And his argument that Bush had a preordained plan to invade Iraq, he says, Bush's main priority even before his election campaign was to invade Iraq, whether or not it possessed weapons of mass destruction. And again, there seems to be increasing evidence of that. This would be a tragedy. I mean, this is an American tragedy, this whole situation. And here we are. And what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? I'm telling you, neither one of the two candidates, neither Kerry nor Bush, in my opinion, are going to be able to, frankly, honestly address what to do about it before the election, because it would be political suicide. But it's quite clear to me that what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to figure out a way to quickly get out, because we are becoming the problem. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
This Sunday on Bravo, you won't believe what the stars are saying on the 10th anniversary season of Inside the Actors Studio.
What turns you on?
I can't tell you that.
This Sunday, Jennifer Lopez. It's everything you wanted to know and the questions you're dying to ask.
Shall we ignore Geely?
Let's not ignore it. Let's talk about it.
Plus, in the weeks ahead, James Gandolfini, Robert Redford, and George Carlin. James Lipton hosts an all-new Inside the Actors Studio with Jennifer Lopez. This Sunday at 8, 7 Central, only on Bravo.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Thank you.
the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. I got back with Mary during the break. She's, you know, kind of cleaned up the issue, hopefully. We'll see how this all shakes out. I frankly am of the opinion that this was not an attempt at voter fraud in Michigan, that it was a mistake. And I'm also of the opinion that there have been clear attempts at voter fraud with regard to these electronic voting machines. So that's a whole other issue. And a big concern of mine, but one that I don't, you know, I'm. This is the reality of having, you know, civil service people who are working hard to make things happen, people who are trying to help democracy work, you know, being the object of our paranoia, as it were. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brad in Southbury, Vermont's on the line. Hey, Brad, what's up?
Well, this is a little confusing for me. You're live, and I'm
you're listening. Yeah, you're listening to last hour's program on WDEV in Vermont. They record it and play it back an hour later.
With Bernie, yeah. But maybe this. Well, maybe I can just run this by you.
Sure.
It seems to me the way that Bernie was talking, and generally speaking, that we don't honor an honest day's work.
Yeah.
Everybody has to get a college education. You have to be an educated person. That it's not honorable to be a janitor, to do, you know, to just a manual Labor's Day work.
I know, and this is absolutely wrong. We used to have an ideal in the United States. Teddy Roosevelt articulated it well when he first brought into public discussion the phrase living wage. And it was Teddy Roosevelt, 1912, when he was Bull Moose Party, when he was, you know, trying to reinvent himself as a progressive after he left being the Republican president. And Franklin Roosevelt picked this thing up and ran with it, with the idea that the rule of the game is, if you work hard, if you do your job, if you pay your dues to society, then we're going to make sure that the rules of the game of business are set up in such a way that you can put food on the table, you can put your kids through school, you can have a decent retirement, you can have medical care, and you don't have to worry about your life. And this is something that, starting with Ronald Reagan in the 1980s, when he declared war on organized labor, has been lost in the United States.
So you agree with me?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
And I make that point 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year on this program.
Well, as I said, I just started listening to you and this whole tape delay thing, I appreciate your response.
Thank you, Brad, and you know, let WDEV know that you're listening and you like the show or whatever. Or,
oh, I do.
Okay.
I just started listening the last couple days.
Great. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
26 and a half minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman Program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. In a few minutes, I believe we're going to have Kevin Zeeson. We may also have Joe Lockhart on. We'll see how that works out. The $145 billion abomination. I had wanted to get to this with in our first hour segment, our talk with Congressman Sanders. Just, you know, time got away. But Congress just passed this. In fact, I would have been interested to ask him how he voted on this. I'm guessing we would have heard a good rant had I, and perhaps we will next week. It comes up. Congress just passed $145 billion, 633-page corporate tax giveaway. Just an absolute. For example, this bill is going to give $27.9 billion to corporations that earn profits abroad. As you know, when Halliburton, under Dick Cheney, when we imposed the sanctions on Iraq and Libya and Iran and said you can't do business with these countries, Dick Cheney simply reincorporated one of his countries in the Cayman Islands, and that company then, division of Halliburton, and all it is a post office box, and any mail that goes to it in the Caymans gets automatically forwarded onto Halliburton headquarters in Houston. That company was doing business with Saddam Hussein under the Food for Oil program. And now we're saying, not only is that okay, and not only are those, you know, not only can you do business overseas, take jobs overseas, But if you earn profits as a result of it, you don't have to pay those profits in the United States, even though you're selling the products in the United States, even though you're based in the United States. A $27.9 billion subsidy for corporations that earn profits abroad. This is outrageous, and this is just the beginning of it. More when we come back. 29 minutes from the past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
This Sunday, everything's wild. Bravo premieres a whole new round of Celebrity Poker Showdown. And the burning question is, what are the nuts? Matthew Perry.
Well, that's a very private question, isn't it?
Cheryl Hines.
How dare you?
Chevy Chase.
What are my choices?
Dave Navarro.
I don't want to go there.
Macaulay Culkin.
The nuts is the unbeatable man. That's kind of what I'm looking for.
Dave Foley hosts the all-new Celebrity Poker Showdown, premiering this Sunday at 9, 8 Central, only on Bravo.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. is bleeding jobs at the fastest rate since George W. Bush first took over the White House in 2001. Job cuts were up 41% in September. Total number of jobs cut so far this year, more than 700,000. AT&T is cutting 7,400 more jobs. For 2004, AT&T will have shrunk its workforce by 12,300. There were nearly 108,000 jobs cut by U.S. companies in September.
Thursday was certainly a busy day for Bank of America. At the same time, the number three U.S. bank was announcing job cuts, a completely unrelated lawsuit accusing the company of massive fraud was filed in court. Parmalat announced it is suing the bank to the sum of $10 billion for playing a central role in one of the biggest financial scandals in European history, after it was revealed that a 4 billion euro Bank of America account being held for Parmalat in the Cayman Islands was actually non-existent. The food group dissolved, leaving more than 100,000 Italian investors with worthless stocks and bonds. The bank is accused of fraud in helping disguise Parmalat's finances and blocking internal investigations. In addition, 4,500 employees, amounting to 2.5% of the company's workforce, will be losing their jobs as a result of a merger with Fleet Boston. In a news release, the National Bank says job cuts will not come from workers that deal directly with customers.
Today's presidential debate focuses on domestic policy, and no one is more concerned about the next president's plan for working people than America's labor unions. SEIU launched what it's calling a Heroes Program in 14 battleground states to get out the Kerry vote. Tracy Surprise, member of the SEIU Heroes Program, goes door-to-door talking to people about the issues.
You can talk about the statistics of health care and the number of people who have no health care, but I get to see the faces.
Surprise worked as a full-time nurse before becoming involved in the program.
The United Steelworkers Union will appeal a court ruling denying shutdown benefits to former employees of Republic Technologies International. The court ruled last week that the company was not obliged to offer the 2,500 former employees pensions. The union had argued that the workers who did not have enough service time to qualify for other pension benefits had a contractual expectation that they would be receiving benefits of $1,000 to $2,000 per month. RTI operated in Connecticut, Illinois, New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and after filing for bankruptcy, closed its doors in August 2002. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. While Walmart has become the textbook case on exploiting workers' wages for company profit, that same philosophy does not apply to its CEO. A report by Responsible Wealth shows that Walmart workers average $329 for a 40-hour work week. In contrast, company CEO Lee Scott raked in almost $300,000 a week in 2003. Quite a wage gap for a company currently facing a lawsuit that claims that it pays women 5% less than men, and 30 other lawsuits connected to overtime pay.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall.
Well, speaking of lunatics, what's Ralph Nader up to? That's a cheap shot, isn't it, Kevin?
Boy, Tom, aren't you friendly?
Yes, indeed. Kevin Zeese is with us.
Lunatics. That's the way you introduce Ralph Nader?
Well, I am increasingly thinking
you know,
that.
It's interesting. The guys who oppose Nader, you know, come from law firms that are primarily Republican, that represent military contractors, represent the financial industry, the credit card industry, pharmaceutical companies.
Then why are they giving money to his campaign?
You're calling Ralph Nader a lunatic, aren't you?
Then why are they giving money to your campaign, Kevin? And why are you guys taking it?
It's interesting. You know, we were doing a tour a couple weeks ago of various cable shows in D.C. and coincidentally at the same time, the head of the Swift Boat campaign was also doing a tour, and we got to talk to him in the green room a bit, and turns out the guy's a lawyer from Houston who's very been following Ralph Nader his whole career, believes he's a American hero for standing up for the health and safety of Americans for 40 years.
You believe him?
And who said he's going to vote for Ralph Nader.
You believed him?
If you look at a Zogby poll that just came out in the last couple of weeks, it shows that half of our voters would not vote for Bush or Kerry, and 25% would vote for Bush if Nader was on the ballot, and 25% would vote for Kerry if they're on the ballot. So why is it surprising that 25% who would vote for Bush as a second choice would also support Nader? Why is that a shock to you?
Kevin, you believed this guy? You got this corporate scumbag lawyer with Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, and he's feeding you this line, and you believed it? We're talking, with Kevin Zeese, so the head of the Nader campaign.
The military-industrial complex opposing Ralph Nader in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio. You have Ken Starr's law firm, Kirkland & Ellis in Ohio, giving free legal time to the Democrats to keep Nader off the ballot. You want to be in bed with Ken Starr's law firm? You want to be in bed with Reed Smith in Pennsylvania, representing pharmaceutical companies and the military-industrial complex? You want to be in bed with Bob Livingston, the former who almost took Newt Gingrich's place as the head of the Republican Party in the House of Representatives, who now represents the military-industrial complex and pharmaceuticals and the Cayman Islands and tax dodgers? That's who you're in bed with by opposing Ralph Nader.
I see.
Wake up and see what you're doing.
We're talking to Kevin Zeese, who is the... What's your title there with the campaigns,
Spokesperson.
Kevin? Spokesperson for the Ralph Nader 2004 campaign. Our number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call in. Kevin, the folks that I am in bed with, actually, I'm a member of a group. You can find my name will be on their website later this afternoon at vote2stopbush2.org. vote2stopbush2.org. And these are the people. We, the undersigned, were selected by Ralph Nader to be members of his 113-person National Nader 2000 Citizens Committee. This year, we urge support for Kerry Edwards in all swing states, even while we strongly disagree with Kerry's policies on Iraq and other issues. You asked who I'm in bed with. I'm in bed with Wendell Berry, Thomas Berry, Noam Chomsky, Ben Cohen, Peter Coyote, Phil Donahue, Ronnie
That's
Duggar, Barbara Ehrenreich, Granny D. Hey, you know, a lot of these people are actually friends of mine. Paul Hawken, Jim Hightower, David Corton, Rabbi Michael Lerner. I've known Michael Lerner for years. I've known David Corton for years. I spent time with him in India. We've traveled around the world together. I've known Paul Hawken for years. I've known Ronnie Duggar for years. Tim Robbins, Susan Sarandon, or Sarandon, however you say it, John Stauber, who I've known for a couple of years, Studs Terkel, Tom Tomorrow, Howard Zinn. These are the folks who have signed this petition. These are the folks that I'd say, if you want to ask me who I'm in bed with, I'd say it's this group.
Am I able to talk now, or is that you done reading?
Sure. Well, oh yeah, and I mean, I let you read your list.
I guess on your show and listen to you give me a monologue. You know, it's interesting. I think there's a lot of people who are very afraid of George Bush, and that's understandable. But the reality is that John Kerry's not going to be much better. He has said he voted for the war. He says he would vote for it again, despite the lack of weapons of mass destruction. He says he wants to fight to the finish. He'll send more troops if necessary. He says he wants to expand the Department of Defense, the Army, by two more battalions. He wants to increase the size of the military-industrial complex. And he's your ally? Come on.
And therefore
wake
you're
up.
Saying and therefore
you.
You're saying George Bush
up.
Should become
vote
president?
Vote for what you want, not what you don't want.
And you really think that if I vote for Nader, that's not going to cause George Bush to become president?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I guess in the 1840s when I think what's going to make George Bush become president is John Kerry running away from his base, not standing up for the peace movement, not standing up for the civil rights movement, not standing up for women, not standing up for labor. He's done nothing for the base of the Democratic Party. Instead,
you know, you're sounding like a Republican.
Instead,
you know, the fact of the matter is, Kevin, that he has spoken out on many of those issues, and he has stood up for many of those constituencies.
To redistribute wealth. That's not my kind of guy. He's been out there promising to vote for the war. Not my kind of guy. And look at who you're really in bed with. You may have those nice names of those scared liberals on your, on your website, but the reality is those who are opposing Nader, trying to keep him off the ballot, are people you would despise. They are the corporate industrial state that controls our government. That's who's trying to keep Nader off the ballot. They're trying to silence the one candidate who's telling the truth. And the truth is, the big corporations who have no allegiance to our country are in control of our country, and that's the problem.
By and large, I absolutely agree with you, Kevin.
Problem.
Kevin, by and large, I absolutely agree with you. And George Bush is going to make it worse then John Kerry will make it worse.
I agree with you on that, too.
Okay. 1-866-889-8894. Michael in Santa Fe is on the line. He's got a question for you, Kevin. We're talking with Kevin Zeese, the spokesperson for the Nader 2004 campaign. Michael, welcome.
Yeah, listen, I'm one of those, worked on Nader's campaign in 2000, was an enthusiastic supporter, and I'd like to strangle him until his eyeballs pop out for running this year. That's the camp I'm in right now. And I just am a little bit offended by his spokesman telling me that I'm a scared liberal and that I'm in bed with the proto-fascist corporatists, because I believe that if we lead, Kerry will follow, and that my view is that, and I wonder what the spokesman thinks of this, is that what we need to do is elect Kerry and hopefully a Democratic Congress, and unlike in 1992, sit on our backsides and do 12-ounce arm bends like Jim Hightower likes to say, and watch, except this time what we need to do is elect Kerry and be on him like a fly on a fresh cow patty about progressive issues. That's the tack we need to take. This destructive idea of that, okay, we need to let Bush be elected for four more years and then, you know, watch, you know, thousands of people suffer. I mean, if you're not one of those victims, sure, you say, oh, let Bush get elected for four more years, things get so bad, and then we'll go into a Great Depression, and then we'll elect Nader in 2008. I'm never voting for Ralph Nader for dog catcher again for doing this, and that's my opinion. And I was wondering what the spokesman thinks of that.
Okay.
Well,
yeah,
I'll tell you what I think about it. I mean, you know, we're not out to reelect George Bush. That's not our goal at all. In fact, we've been attacking George Bush more aggressively than John Kerry has. While he was out windsurfing during the Republican convention, we were inside the convention going after Kerry. You can see the documents on votenair.org. We were handing out inside the convention calls to impeach Bush and Cheney with the evidence of how he lied to send us a war. We were inside showing how he has a compassionless conservative who's increased poverty for 3 years in a row, denied people health care in greater numbers, lowered wages, increased death at home and abroad. And we also were handing out documents of the four-year failed presidency of George Bush. So we're very critical of George Bush. I do agree with you that if Kerry gets elected, we need to push Kerry to stand for something. But my disagreement is we need to start pushing Kerry now. Kerry would be a better candidate if the scared liberals did not give their vote to him for free. Right now, Kerry's being pulled by the corporate interests into a corporate direction.
But, Kevin, if we don't give our vote for him for free...
Let me make my point.
You've made a whole bunch of points here. If we don't give our votes to him for free, what are you talking about?
Here you are. What are you asking for?
We're asking for him to become president of the United States.
What have you asked
him
to do?
And I'm on his blog every day going, hey, man, do this. You know, he sounds starting to sound like Howard Dean more and more every day. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Howard Dean did a good job taking a lot of Nader's lines. I agree with that. But my point is, if we don't start to challenge Kerry now and make demands of him now, he will have no mandate when he gets in, and he's become a weaker and weaker candidate as he's listened to the corporate interests and not the progressive interests, because the progressives have been so foolish to give their votes away for free with this anybody but Bush mantra, make no demands on Kerry.
Okay,
well,
Michael.
Well, if we are pushing him, I think it's been an effect. I'll let you guys go now, but thanks for letting me be on.
Sure, thanks, Michael, and thank you for making your point. 1-866-889-8894. Alfred in Wyoming, Michigan on the line. Hey, Alfred.
Yeah,
you're live with Kevin Zeese of the
Nader
campaign.
Your theory about that we don't have runoff elections, but this gentleman is reminds me of what Churchill said, and like that Senator Stevens and this gentleman, if your position's weak, raise your voice and pound the table. But I think that what Nader is doing is playing the same role that the communists did in Nazi Germany in 1933, ran their own candidate rather than getting together the socialists and democratic socialists, Christian Democrats, behind Hindenburg to keep Hitler from coming to power.
And they could have done it, actually, if they'd joined together.
Yeah, they would have. Hitler never got more than 43% of the vote, and then Hindenburg, because of his old age,
we're not voting for any corporate candidate anymore.
I think what he's saying is...
Kevin, hang on just a second. Both of you guys are talking at once, and I'm going to pot you both down here. Kevin, let Alfred finish, and then I will let you talk.
Yeah, okay. So I say that you're playing a role where all you are is being a spoiler. And I've always respected Nader. I thought of voting for him the last time, but here again, Bush is such a lightweight, he makes helium seem like lead, that I did vote for Gore. But we don't have a choice. And besides, you have Nader will not have a possibility of a Democratic House or Senate to work with him. He's just one branch of the government.
Yeah, you want to? Okay, got a chance. So that's your point, Alfred. Thanks for the point, Kevin. Your response.
Yeah, my response is that, you know, you're welcome to take that position you want. You can vote for Kerry if you want. If that's what your conscience tells you to do, no one's telling you not to. But don't tell me to vote for Kerry. I don't believe in Kerry's war. I don't believe in Kerry's view on the Patriot Act, on Israel, on even on the environment. He's too weak for me. So I'm just not going to go with this corporate second party, you know. And I think it's, we're more like the abolitionists of the 1840s. They made a commitment in 1840s to say, we are not going to support either Whig or Democrat if they support slavery. We're saying the same thing. We're not going to support either Republican or Democrat if they continue to take money from the corporate interests and represent the corporate interests instead of the people's interests.
But what
that's
the abolitionists
the time that needs to be faced up to.
But what the abolitionists did in the 1840s, Kevin, was they infiltrated. I mean, the Whigs were already in decline. The Whigs were disintegrating by 1837, and they infiltrated the Republican Party, which is emerging in the became formal in the early 1850s, and infiltrated a major party, and poof, you had the Republican Party.
Well, the Republicans weren't a major party until Lincoln got elected. They were a minor party that was developing. I agree the Whigs were in decline, just as the Democrats are in decline. The Democrats have been losing election after election. If you look at the last 20 years of the Democratic Party, they've gone from being the majority state legislatures, majority governorships.
So you're hoping that you can kind of replace them?
Losing throughout. They're a party in decline. Okay. It's time to abandon them.
I see. Okay, let's go to Lisa in Santa Fe. Lisa, you're on the air. We're talking with Kevin Zeis, who's the spokesperson for the Ralph Nader campaign, Nader 2004, which is a what? VoteNader.org?
VoteNader.org.
Okay.
You got it.
Lisa, go ahead.
I wanted to ask the guest why Ralph Nader didn't go the road that Dennis Kucinich went in terms of getting his views out, which are similar to Nader's in many ways, but he got them out through the Democratic Party in a very honorable way.
Well, because he doesn't believe in the two-party system. He wants to break the two-party system apart. He sees the corporate Democratic Party as part of the problem, not part of the solution. He doesn't think you can clean the garbage from inside the garbage can. He believes that you get more attention at this part of this time of year than you do
Kevin, are you really trying to tell me
that
Ralph Nader?
Are you
really trying to tell me right now that Ralph Nader doesn't realize that we don't have proportional representation or instant runoff voting in the United States?
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you just did. You said he doesn't believe in the two-party system. It's not a matter of believing. It's like you don't believe in gravity. I mean, we have a two-party system in the United States because of the way our Constitution is set up.
And we had slavery because of things. We had segregation. We had no women's vote.
And those things all got changed.
About as challenging.
George Bush is not going to change these things.
It's certainly going to change if you lay down and take it, like you guys are trying to do. We're saying challenge it. That's how things get changed.
I'm saying join the Democratic Party, infiltrate from within. I'm saying join the Democratic Party, infiltrate it.
The Democratic Party's dying. I'm not going to join a dying party that represents
it's a dying party that has huge resources, people all over the country, millions of dollars. Why not take it over the way the conservatives took over the Republican Party?
And we've seen them use those resources to be very anti-democratic. 22 states we've been in litigation just to get on the ballot.
Because the corporations have been working to take them over through the Democratic Leadership Council.
Am I allowed to talk? You can interrupt me all the time.
No, well, this is a dialogue, Kevin. We're going to go back and forth.
Okay, well, I'm trying to make a point. You keep on talking over me. My point was that the Democratic Party has been shown to be very anti-democratic, trying to keep Nader off the ballot, denying millions of voters their choice of a candidate. That's not a party I want to be part of. A party that will use their resources, their Goliath resources, to step on a David's not something I want to be part of.
Okay. Lisa, did you make your point?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he answered my question.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Much,
let's move along to Mike in Hood River, Oregon. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you. Point I want to make is, instead of just being delusional and being more destructive than productive, why doesn't Nader get behind something like instant runoff voting and reform of the election process? Because people do want to vote their conscience, but the reality is right now we can't go as far as we want to.
Good point. I agree with the caller. I mean,
what I'm hearing here is just totally destructive and just not productive.
I don't agree with that. I mean, I agree with you first that we do need to raise issues like instant runoff voting and proportional representation. If you look at our website, votenader.org, Nader has a long statement on instant runoff voting, and he's very positive about that as a part of the solution. But I don't think we're being destructive by telling the truth. That's how democratic debate works, by getting out there and telling the truth about the anti-democratic, corporate-controlled Democratic Party. You guys on the inside have a better chance of reforming.
How come Nader is trashing the Democratic Party more than the Republican Party these days in most of his public appearances?
No, we don't. Actually,
you have been here today.
I'm here today because that's what you're asking me about.
Yeah.
You're asking me to join the Democratic Party. I'm telling you why not. You know, the Democratic Party's made a big mistake in this election by attacking Nader and his ballot access.
Okay, Kevin, let's let Mike have his final say.
Okay,
here. We've got a couple more
just
calls.
Just real quick, I wanted to make one more point. I think telling the truth and being out there stating his case is a good thing, but you can't play into the hands of the Republicans and just jump into this factionalism, which is really just playing into their hands. And what Nader has done well before, and I think he could do now, is just grasp onto this one groundbreaking reform that we could make that could really allow us to do what he wants us to be able to do. So that's my point.
Yeah, he could be changing this the same way he changed our auto safety rules, for example, and the Center for Auto Safety and so many of our other laws, you know, by standing on the outside participating or getting involved. Anyhow,
that's what he's doing.
Yeah, well, I understand you think that. And Kevin, hang on over the break here. We're going to pick you up on the other side. We still have a couple of callers who want to talk with you. We're talking with Kevin Zeis, the spokesperson for the Nader 2004 campaign. Vote Nader. 10 minutes before the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A new report by the Human Rights Center of the University of California at Berkeley and the Washington, D.C.-based anti-slavery group Free the Slaves states that at any given time in the United States, 10,000 or more people are forced through violence to work in deplorable conditions for little or no pay. Kelly Ramirez has more.
According to the report, Hidden Slaves, Forced Labor in the United States, slavery occurs in at least 90 U.S. cities. About 46% of American slaves are engaged in sex work. Most of the rest are in domestic work, agriculture, and sweatshops. Laurel Fletcher of the Human Rights Center at UC Berkeley says three factors contribute to the use of forced labor.
The first is demand. There is a demand in this country for cheap, exploitable labor. Two, there's a lack of legal protections for workers in these sectors. And the final one, which is related, is a lack of monitoring. For example, domestic workers. The work takes place in the private home. Virtually no monitoring is going on.
Jolene Smith, director of Free the Slaves, says there are places escaped slaves can go.
We're fortunate that a number of homeless shelters and domestic violence shelters around the country have volunteered to take in victims of slavery and trafficking in the United States.
Smith says that people need to see slavery as related to other labor issues.
When we tackle the issue of slavery, we should also think of eliminating sweatshop labor and making sure that workers in factories have their basic rights. After that, the next sort of dot to connect is the right to organize. If workers are able to organize around the world, then the chances of them being enslaved are going to decrease.
The Hidden Slaves Report is available online at www.freetheslaves.net. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Kelly Ramar.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
How many times must a man look up before he can see the sky?
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Kevin Zeese of the NADER 2004 campaign, votenader.org. And my side of the story, vote number two, stopbush.org, if you'd like to see the duel as it goes. Kevin, let's go to another call here. George in Manteca, California on the line. George, welcome.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to call and make a comment. I really don't have a question for Mr. Zeese. As a Jeffersonian progressive and after reading your book and really enlightening myself, you look at what Mr. Zeese is saying about, you know, being basically a third-party movement and trying to cancel out Mr. Kerry, and you know, he represents corporate America. You know, all this type of rhetoric, we're all supposed to be progressives, we're all supposed to stand together to change America, is, you know, it's really the symptom of what many on the right have, the true believer syndrome, which is fine to truly believe in things, but to criticize and to tear down anybody that disagrees with you. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be all together in this. And I honestly don't think that Ralph Nader's the answer. And I don't, you know, Mr. Zeese wants to think that that's fine. If he wants to vote for him, that's fine. I think it's the wrong thing to do, but it's amazing because we see...
Wrap it up, George.
What was that?
I'm asking you to wrap it up. We're short on time, and I want Kevin to have an answer.
My point is, he's true of the true believer on both the right and the left, which, you know, just doesn't play to people.
Yes, this black and white thinking. Thanks, George. I appreciate the call.
I know. If you guys want to call a true believer, I welcome that, but I could call you guys party hacks. I mean, if we want a name call, we can name call. I'd urge you, in addition to the websites you gave, I'd urge your listeners to go to some other websites to see who you're really working with.
Okay, but we don't have time for that. I want to bring in Star in Sacramento, California as well.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Yeah. Your website, votenator.org.
No, I want to go to Reed Smith Law Firm in Pennsylvania, Kirkland Ellis, and the Living
Star in Sacramento, California. You're live on the air with Kevin.
That's who you're in bed with.
Hey, Star.
Hi. I voted for Nader in the 2000 election, and I believe in all of his principles, but I think we're facing such a great danger now that we have to think tactically. If we get Kerry in, then perhaps, as Tom said, we can, you know, put his feet to the fire and then bring in some of Nader's progressive ideas. I mean, I really believe in Nader, and I would vote for him if this wasn't such a crucial election. But I feel like if we lose, if Bush wins, then our country is down the tubes.
Okay, Star. Kevin, you're going to have the last word.
You're calling from California, which is a safe state. So if you want to vote tactically, you should vote for what you believe in, not what you fear. Even Zinn and Chomsky say they're going to be voting for Nader in Massachusetts.
Okay. Kevin, thank you very much. We got to end it right there. This is Kevin Zeese of the Nader 2004 campaign. VoteNader.org is his website. Thanks, Star, for that call also. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
Been listening to the been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Give a small child a knife, and the poor tyke is likely to chop off a finger. But in the hands of a master chef, that knife is a tool for creating a sumptuous feast. It's the same thing with money. Give money to poor people, and they'll probably squander it on foolish indulgences like aluminum siding or medicine or food. But it's
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. is bleeding jobs at the fastest rate since George W. Bush first took over the White House in 2001. Job cuts were up 41% in September. Total number of jobs cut so far this year, more than 700,000. AT&T is cutting 7,400 more jobs. For 2004, AT&T will have shrunk its workforce by 12,300. There were nearly 108,000 jobs cut by U.S. companies in September.
Thursday was certainly a busy day for Bank of America. At the same time, the number three U.S. bank was announcing job cuts, a completely unrelated lawsuit accusing the company of massive fraud was filed in court. Parmalat announced it is suing the bank to the sum of $10 billion for playing a central role in one of the biggest financial scandals in European history, after it was revealed that a 4 billion euro Bank of America account being held for Parmalat in the Cayman Islands was actually non-existent. The food group dissolved, leaving more than 100,000 Italian investors with worthless stocks and bonds. The bank is accused of fraud in helping disguise Parmalat's finances and blocking internal investigations. In addition, 4,500 employees, amounting to 2.5% of the company's workforce, will be losing their jobs as a result of a merger with Fleet Boston. In a news release, the National Bank says job cuts will not come from workers that deal directly with customers.
Today's presidential debate focuses on domestic policy, and no one is more concerned about the next president's plan for working people than America's labor unions. SEIU launched what it's calling a Heroes Program in 14 battleground states to get out the Kerry vote. Tracy Surprise, member of the SEIU Heroes Program, goes door-to-door talking to people about the issues.
You can talk about the statistics of health care and the number of people who have no health care, but I get to see the faces.
Surprise worked as a full-time nurse before becoming involved in the program.
The United Steelworkers Union will appeal a court ruling denying shutdown benefits to former employees of Republic Technologies International. The court ruled last week that the company was not obliged to offer the 2,500 former employees pensions. The union had argued that the workers who did not have enough service time to qualify for other pension benefits had a contractual expectation that they would be receiving benefits of $1,000 to $2,000 per month. RTI operated in Connecticut, Illinois, New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and after filing for bankruptcy, closed its doors in August 2002. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. While Walmart has become the textbook case on exploiting workers' wages for company profit, that same philosophy does not apply to its CEO. A report by Responsible Wealth shows that Walmart workers average $329 for a 40-hour work week. In contrast, company CEO Lee Scott raked in almost $300,000 a week in 2003. Quite a wage gap for a company currently facing a lawsuit that claims that it pays women 5% less than men, and 30 other lawsuits connected to overtime pay.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Thank you, Nicole and Jeff Rank, for standing your ground and standing up for all of us. This young couple from Charleston, West Virginia, was arrested on the state capitol grounds during a July 4th appearance by George W. They had come to see the press in person, but also to make a quiet statement of their own. They wore hand-painted T-shirts with the international no symbol slashed across Bush's name. That was it. They didn't shout, heckle, or disrupt anything. They simply wore T-shirts. But as they stood there peacefully, two Secret Service agents accosted them, demanding that their T-shirts be removed or covered. No, they quietly said. So the agents instructed local police to arrest them. They were handcuffed, jailed, and charged with trespassing. Nicole, who worked for a federal agency, was subsequently dismissed from her job. But the Ranks, who had never before engaged in protest, fought the ridiculous trespassing charge, and now a local judge has thrown it out of court. Also, Charleston's embarrassed city council has publicly apologized for violating the Ranks' First Amendment rights, noting the city police only acted because they were directed to do so by the Secret Service. And the federal agency backed down and rehired Nicole. Now, Nicole and Jeff are trying to stop the Bushites from stomping on other people's right to protest, as has been happening at Bush events all across the country. With the ACLU, the Ranks have filed a federal lawsuit against both the White House and Secret Service, seeking a court order declaring such repressive political actions unconstitutional. Jeff, a registered Republican, says simply, "Unless common citizens like ourselves are willing to stand and fight for their civil liberties, those very liberties that our nation was founded upon, ideals of freedom that keep us strong today, will wither and erode until they are gone forever." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Thanks to the Ranks for standing so tall."
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. How'd you like to earn a quick $6,000 to $8,000? If you happen to be in the audience tonight in St. Louis, perhaps one of our listeners will be. The website onesimplequestion.blogspot.com is offering a bounty of up to $8,000 for any journalist. I suppose you could call yourself a journalist. Maybe for any person, I would think. Here the thing says, any journalist who asks President Bush the simple question, one simple question: were you ever arrested, and if so, how many times? Were you ever arrested, and if so, how many times? It'd be interesting to see if he talked. I mean, we know that there are several arrests that are on record, and in fact, convictions. But also, there are arrests that have apparently been expunged from his record as well, as cocaine arrest when he was younger in Texas and things like that. So, anyhow, somebody tonight, the debate is going to be a town hall format, and some person in the audience, it'll be interesting to watch tonight. To watch the debate and see if some person in the audience decides to make a quick $6,000 or $8,000 by standing up and saying, "Mr. Bush, were you ever arrested, and if so, how many times?" Here's something that's really extraordinary. I want to get this kind of partisan stuff out of the way. I also want to get into it. There's an extraordinary story on the front page of the Wall Street Journal today that really highlights one of the big problems of what's going on in America. We'll get back to that in just a minute. But in the partisan arena, as it were, and those of you who have been listening to the program for years know that this program generally is not particularly partisan, but we're in the middle of an election cycle. I mean, we've got another 25 days to go here. We can't avoid this stuff. Was President Bush, Salon.com asks, literally, Dave Lindorf and Salon.com, literally channeling Karl Rove in his first debate with John Kerry? Here's how it works. If you go to C-SPAN, you can see the entire videotape of the entire debate. You can download the thing. You can just, skip through it, and you can watch it online. Go to cspan.org, c-span.org. And you can see the debate from, a week ago. Or it was a week ago, wasn't it? Boy, time flies. Whenever it was, the first Bush-Kerry debate. And maybe it was 2 weeks. I had so much for my sense of time. Anyhow, if you scroll in that debate to the 23rd minute, there is a moment in there where Fox News, who was providing the feed of the debate, broke the rules that the Republicans had required. That lawyer who is defending the king, the royal family of Saudi Arabia and the kingdom of Saudi Arabia against the lawsuits by the 9/11 families, James Baker III, who negotiated these rules on behalf of George W. Bush, old Bush family friend, explicitly laid out in the rules a requirement that there will not be a camera behind the candidates or that could photograph the backs of the candidates. Fox News ignored them, to their credit. I never thought I would say to the credit of Fox News. They ignored that requirement. And in the 23rd minute of the videotape that you can see on C-SPAN, which was originally the feed from Fox, you will see a camera shot from behind George Bush looking at his back and then the audience in front of him. And clearly visible on that camera shot, in the middle of his back, about midway between his shoulder blades, is a square box underneath his coat. A little larger than the size of a pack of cigarettes. A little larger than the size of a deck of cards, I'd say, in fact. What was that? What sort of an electronic device was George W. Bush wearing, strapped to his back, during the first debate with Kerry? Well, the folks in the blogosphere are just going nuts with this. This apparently was just discovered a few days ago. And it's there. I mean, it's there. I'm not telling you, some kind of wacky, flying saucer stuff here. You can see the picture yourself. Go to C-SPAN, c-span.org, and go to the 23rd minute of the video. And there it is. Or you can go to salon.com, and they have a photograph, a freeze frame of it. You can see it in this article. Bush's Mystery Bulge. And what some are suggesting is that Bush has been doing what some TV commentators do. And there's actually a skill to this, and you can learn it fairly easily, or some folks can learn it fairly easily. I learned it very easily as a child, actually, where when somebody speaks, you can simply say what they're saying really, really quickly. Just like right on top of them. And in fact, I haven't done this for years because it makes her absolutely crazy. But I know how to drive my wife nuts, and that is, she will say, "Well, what do you think about it?" And just as soon as she has "well" out of her mouth, I'm "well," and you can just lay a word on top of the other person's words, and so it sounds like you're saying what the other person is saying. And it's very disconcerting when somebody does this to you. When we were kids, it was like, a game, a tease. But there actually are TV reporters who, instead of reading teleprompters because they don't read particularly well or they have dyslexia, which we know is the case with George Bush, instead have an earpiece on and they have somebody reading to them in their ear the news. So in their ear, they're hearing, "With U.S. Marines gone and central government authority virtually non-existent," and they're saying, as they're hearing it, "With U.S. Marines gone and central government authority virtually non-existent," only it's not the delay like that. I mean, it's literally right on top of it. I should have had, Ira call me up on one of the lines here and read something so I could demonstrate this for you. But it's something I can tell you. It's something that some TV folks do. And in fact, in the Salon.com article here, the author, Dave Lindorf, points out because Bush is famously prone to malapropisms and reportedly dyslexic, which could make successful use of a teleprompter problematic. They say the president and his handlers may have turned to a technique often used by television reporters on remote stand-ups. A reporter tapes a story and, while on camera, plays it back in an earpiece, repeating lines just after hearing them, managing to sound spontaneous and error-free. Suggestions that Bush may have been using this technique stem from a D-Day event in France. I'm still reading from the Salon.com report. When a CNN broadcast appeared to pick up and broadcast to surprised viewers the sound of another voice seemingly reading Bush his lines, after which Bush repeated them. Danny Schechter, who runs MediaChannel.org, says that when he was at the Republican National Convention, he was walking around with a camera, and the Bush campaign came up and asked him what frequency the camera was operating on, if it was broadcasting to a remote location. They're very concerned about radio frequency interference during Bush's speech. He said, they had a frequency specialist stop me and ask me about the frequency of my camera. The Democrats weren't doing that at their convention. So what's going on? Do we have a Milli Vanilli president? Was George Bush lip-syncing? One of the things that is causing a lot of people to think this is, as Dave Lindorf points out in Salon.com today, on several occasions, the president simply stopped speaking for an uncomfortably long time and stared ahead with an odd expression on his face. Was he listening to someone helping him with his response to a question? Even weirder was the president's strange outburst, a peeved rejoinder to Kerry. He said, now he said this, nobody had interrupted him, and he still had a green light. He had plenty of time to talk. And he said, and I quote, as the politics change, his positions change, and that's how the commander-in-chief acts. Let me finish. The intelligence I looked at was the same intelligence my opponent looked at. Now, who was he saying that to? Nobody had interrupted him. He still had a green light. Maybe he was talking to the person who was talking into his ear. They interviewed, for this article, they interviewed a fellow by the name of McKenna, Jacob McKenna, who runs a spy store, high-tech surveillance shop in Spokane, Washington. And he says that there are these super small receivers you can put in your ear that are invisible from outside because they go so far down into the ear canal you can't see them. They're like smaller than hearing aids. They're very expensive. The problem is that because they're so small, they can't pick up a signal unless the signal is like right on top of them, very close to them. So you have to carry a metal box about the size of a pack of cards that receives the signal from a distance that's being transmitted to you and then rebroadcasts it to the little earphone, amplifies it and rebroadcasts it on a different frequency to the little earphone. And a lot of people are asking, was George Bush wearing one of these things in the last debate? Sure looks like it. And if so, will he be tonight? Are we going to, maybe he'll have the common sense, if he is wearing it tonight, to clip it to the back of his belt or put it in his pants or something, although that might produce even more interesting pictures. So, interesting stuff coming up. I wanted to get this piece in the Wall Street Journal. This is extraordinary. The malpractice caps. People talk, you know, Edwards and Cheney were talking about this in the debate the other night, and a number of states, I believe it's 27 states now, have put caps on malpractice on pain and suffering awards, which means that if you have, as the result of medical malpractice, a baby who's deformed for life, you can only, you can't say, you know, the pain and suffering of this is, or if you are malformed or deformed or damaged or your life has been absolutely shattered in some way, the most you can get for pain and suffering is $250,000. Basically, what the conservatives are saying is that's what a person's life is worth, is $250,000, period. And in fact, in this article, Fred Heisland, the chief executive of Californians United for Patient Protection, which sounds like a pro-consumer group. It's actually a nonprofit group of medical associations, insurers, and others based in Sacramento that support the state's tort reform efforts. He says, quote, this is in the Wall Street Journal today, paying people for their pain is an idea whose time has come and gone. Now, a lot of folks listen to that and they say, well, you know, okay, I mean, you know, some people have been getting outrageous settlements. But here's what's interesting. The conservatives want to keep in place in these tort reform laws the ability to reimburse somebody for wages lost, but not for pain and suffering. So the effect of this is that if you're a multimillionaire and somebody commits malpractice on you, you can get a multi-million dollar judgment for lost income. But if you only earn $30,000 a year and somebody commits malpractice on you or a product harms you, you can only get your salary. I mean, at that, you know, and good luck finding a lawyer who's going to defend you for $30,000. You know, when it costs $100,000 just to get the expert witnesses in to make the defense. We are creating a two-tiered malpractice lawsuit system in the United States where only wealthy families are being protected. Is this what we want? Well, apparently it's what the conservatives want. It's on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. It's like, isn't this great? 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This Sunday on Bravo, you won't believe what the stars are saying on the 10th anniversary season of Inside the Actors Studio.
What turns you on?
I can't tell you that.
This Sunday, Jennifer Lopez. It's everything you wanted to know and the questions you're dying to ask.
Shall we ignore Geely?
Let's not ignore it. Let's talk about it.
Plus, in the weeks ahead, James Gandolfini, Robert Redford, and George Carlin. James Lipton hosts an all-new Inside the Actors Studio with Jennifer Lopez. This Sunday at 8, 7 Central, only on Bravo.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.com. www.thepeacefulbeyond.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Bring him on.
To all the troops I sent to war, who won't be coming home no more, I'm glad you came along. I dedicate this song to all the troops I sent.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I want to clarify the comment I made as we were going out into the last break. The Wall Street Journal in this front page article does not editorialize about this issue. They do not say, isn't this great? It's a well-written, it's written by Rachel Zimmerman and Joseph Hallinan, and it's called As Malpractice Caps Spread, Lawyers Turn Away Some Cases. The front page of today's Wall Street Journal. You must read it. It's extraordinary. And no, they don't editorialize. However, the conservative worldview on this, which is not being advocated in this article, but is represented in this article. The conservative worldview on this is that this is a great thing, as they quote, Fred Highstand saying, paying people for their pain is an idea whose time has come and gone. And really, it's having a much larger effect. And that is that women who don't work, or for that matter, men who don't work. But, in the example that's used in this article in particular, women who are householders, women who are, stay-at-home moms, they can forget about being defended in court now. You forget about it because you don't have an income. Pain and suffering has been capped at $250,000. If a lawyer is going to represent you, they're going to have to pay $100,000 out of pocket to get expert witnesses in and to launch the case. And there's only going to be, a maximum of $250,000 is going to come back because there's not going to be any reimbursement for your lost income because you don't have an income. They're not going to take the case. I mean, how can they pay themselves? Typically, a lawyer takes a third of the return. A $250,000 case, $100,000 is more than a third of that. Their expenses would exceed their income. And, in fact, that's what's happening. They're not taking these cases anymore. For example, this from this article, in today's Wall Street Journal, As Malpractice Caps Spread, Lawyers Turn Away Some Cases, by Rachel Zimmerman and Joseph Hallinan. One case in Pasadena decided last year involved a woman who died of an infection following a gastric bypass. Survived by her husband and two minor children, the victim, who had a master's degree and worked as a school administrator, won $1.6 million in economic damages. Okay, this is somebody, who has an income. In the other case, decided this year in San Bernardino County, an unmarried woman on welfare with two minor children died of an infection during a stillbirth after the doctor ignored the patient's symptoms until it was too late. In that case, $200,000 in economic damages was awarded. During the trial, Dr. Fagel argued, "We are saying to doctors and hospitals, it's okay to kill somebody who comes from a poor family because ultimately they aren't going to have the same effect on your medical malpractice insurance as somebody who comes from a rich family." I mean, that's the bottom line here. They wrap the story up with a story of a woman who's unable to find anybody to sue on her behalf because it's about a baby. Babies don't have economic income. The effects of these caps became clear to Donald Costello, a lawyer in Santa Cruz, they write in this article, California, after he handled two virtually identical breast cancer cases. Both involved married mothers in their 40s who had two children and died from their breast cancer. One plaintiff was a housewife, and her case was settled for $300,000. The other was a Silicon Valley executive whose family won a $2 million settlement. Why? Because she was rich. So, and it's legal under the laws that the conservatives are advocating for what they call tort reform to reimburse rich people for their losses. But it's not legal to provide poor people with any sort of income for pain and suffering. what is wrong with this picture? Well, I'll tell you, from the conservative point of view, everything is right with this picture. Because the conservative agenda for the United States is the installation of aristocracy. Let's go back to the Hamiltonian notion of aristocracy, of a landed gentry. Wipe out the middle class, have more and more poor, working poor, more terrified workers who are willing to work for any wage whatsoever just to have a job, so that the rabble can be quelled and wealth can be consolidated in the United States. And this is what is going on. It's what's been going on since Ronald Reagan came into office with conservative economics, right through the Clinton administration as well. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
This Sunday, everything's wild. Bravo premieres a whole new round of Celebrity Poker Showdown. And the burning question is, what are the nuts? Matthew Perry.
Well, that's a very private question, isn't it?
Cheryl Hines.
How dare you?
Chevy Chase.
What are my choices?
Dave Navarro.
I don't want to go there.
Macaulay Culkin.
The nuts is the unbeatable man. That's kind of what I'm looking for.
Dave Foley hosts the all-new Celebrity Poker Showdown, premiering this Sunday at 9, 8 central, only on Bravo.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. is bleeding jobs at the fastest rate since George W. Bush first took over the White House in 2001. Job cuts were up 41% in September. Total number of jobs cut so far this year, more than 700,000. AT&T is cutting 7,400 more jobs. For 2004, AT&T will have shrunk its workforce by 12,300. There were nearly 108,000 jobs cut by U.S. companies in September.
Thursday was certainly a busy day for Bank of America. At the same time, the number three U.S. bank was announcing job cuts, a completely unrelated lawsuit accusing the company of massive fraud was filed in court. Parmalat announced it is suing the bank to the sum of $10 billion for playing a central role in one of the biggest financial scandals in European history, after it was revealed that a 4 billion euro Bank of America account being held for Parmalat in the Cayman Islands was actually non-existent. The food group dissolved, leaving more than 100,000 Italian investors with worthless stocks and bonds. The bank is accused of fraud in helping disguise Parmalat's finances and blocking internal investigations. In addition, 4,500 employees, amounting to 2.5% of the company's workforce, will be losing their jobs as a result of a merger with Fleet Boston. In a news release, the National Bank says job cuts will not come from workers that deal directly with customers.
Today's presidential debate focuses on domestic policy, and no one is more concerned about the next president's plan for working people than America's labor unions. SEIU launched what it's calling a Heroes Program in 14 battleground states to get out the Kerry vote. Tracy Surprise, member of the SEIU Heroes Program, goes door-to-door talking to people about the issues.
You can talk about the statistics of health care and the number of people who have no health care, but I get to see the faces.
Surprise worked as a full-time nurse before becoming involved in the program.
The United Steelworkers Union will appeal a court ruling denying shutdown benefits to former employees of Republic Technologies International. The court ruled last week that the company was not obliged to offer the 2,500 former employees pensions. The union had argued that the workers who did not have enough service time to qualify for other pension benefits had a contractual expectation that they would be receiving benefits of $1,000 to $2,000 per month. RTI operated in Connecticut, Illinois, New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and after filing for bankruptcy, closed its doors in August 2002. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. While Walmart has become the textbook case on exploiting workers' wages for company profit, that same philosophy does not apply to its CEO. A report by Responsible Wealth shows that Walmart workers average $329 for a 40-hour work week. In contrast, company CEO Lee Scott raked in almost $300,000 a week in 2003. Quite a wage gap for a company currently facing a lawsuit that claims that it pays women 5% less than men, and 30 other lawsuits connected to overtime pay.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You swift boat liars, you would carry.
And welcome back.
And now you're putting kids in harm's way. Does your conscience fight?
Somehow I doubt it. Somehow I doubt it.
Hey, Wall in Alabama.
Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And, you know, I'd like to do a contest. I'd like to give away a bumper sticker. And, putting the con in conservative. It was putting the con in conservative, right? That's the bumper sticker?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, great. We've got a bumper sticker here that we're going to run a contest. And the first person to correctly answer this question, and please do not call until I have finished the question, or until I've given all four of the possible answers. A multiple-choice question. There are four possible answers, A, B, C, and D. Please do not call until you hear the fourth answer. Our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. And I'll give that again after I ask the last question. And I'm just going to put people right smack on the air. I'm going to put you on the air. I'm going to say, you know, name and city and what's the answer. And when we get the right answer, then we'll stop at that point. And so it'll be clear to everyone. And yes, there is a delay on this thing, so we don't need to go there. Anyway, 1-866-889-8894. Here's the question. Between the time of the election of 2000... when they began disputing the ballot vote in the ballot count in Florida, and the time that the Supreme Court gave George Bush the presidency, you know, there was a gap of time there, and during that gap of time, how did before George Bush knew that he was going to be president, how did George W. Bush initially react to the stress of the undecided election? Answer: How did he handle the stress? A, he dove headfirst off the wagon and started drinking. B, he had a heart attack. C, a huge boil erupted above his right cheek. Or D, he became so enraged that he actually began biting people. 1-866-889-8894. How did Bush handle the stress of the election not being decided before the Supreme Court had handed the election to him? A, he dove headfirst off the wagon. B, he had a heart attack. C, a huge boil erupted above his right cheek. Or D, he became so enraged he actually began biting people. And Ira, don't grab these calls. Put that person back on hold, and I will grab them. Hi, name and city. Hello, you're live and on the air. Your name and city? Oh, this person has gone. Hello? Nope. Okay. 1-866. Oh, and Victoria Jones is on. But we got this contest. Hey, Victoria, I'm gonna VIP you and put you on, and you can hang out and listen in here. Our question: how did George Bush handle the stress of the election? Hi, your name and city.
Well, this is Victoria.
Coosay, Oregon, one of your new cities.
Oh, great. And your name was, I'm sorry?
Rosemary.
Oh, hey, Rosemary. And what do you think
I
is the answer?
I have tons of friends in Santa Fe. I used to live there.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
so I hear them on your show.
Yeah. So what's the answer? A, George Bush dealt with the stress by diving headfirst off the wagon. B, he had a heart attack. C, a huge boil erupted above his right cheek. Or D, he became so enraged he actually began biting people.
Well, it was C, but the funniest ones, are the ones he didn't do, I guess, that
yeah.
you don't know about.
Okay.
C was the answer, because I remember that boil.
Ah, okay, great. there you go. In fact, here's this question from the George W. Bush quiz book by Paul Selinsky. And the New York Times columnist Gail Collins wrote, Bush attempted to look presidential, but only managed to look like a turtle with a skin problem. However, there was some truth to another one of the answers. Days later, Dick Cheney had a minor heart attack, his fourth. And doctors inserted a stent into an artery to keep it open. A lot of people don't remember that Dick Cheney had a heart attack while that debate, while that vote was being
strung
out. Yeah. That's a whole other topic. Anyhow, I'm going to put you on hold so Ira can get your address and he can mail you this bumper sticker that says Bush Cheney putting the con in conservative, and you can proudly display it on your car.
I shall. Thank you so much, and I'm really glad you're here in town.
Yeah, I am too, and thank you for listening to us on KBBR.
Okay.
It's the Tom Hartman radio program, and Victoria Jones is with us with our daily report from the Talk Radio News Service from Washington, D.C. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, how are you?
Great. It was amazing. The first caller, we had other callers come in. The first caller who actually got through had the correct answer. I guess, sometimes people call when they know that they've got the right answer. Often we get a lot of people with guesses, So anyhow, what's up?
The debate.
The debate, yeah, for sure.
Yep, that's what's up.
Is
and, uh, I'm so glad I'm not doing this debate because there's so much to memorize from the jobs thing and then from the WMD thing and then remembering everything your opponent said so that you can quote it back to them and then remembering your one-liners. And
well, bring what all that brings up, Victoria, are you familiar with this article in Salon.com today that shows this photo from the 23rd minute of the C-SPAN tape?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, well, how are, you know, is there any kind of buzz in Washington, D.C. about that, or is this simply in the blogosphere?
Well, there isn't any buzz yet, and I don't think there will be any buzz until the cable news networks pick it up, and they're usually a bit slow, but they will pick it up, I should think, Keith Olbermann or somebody, and it'll be talked about then.
Yeah.
But no, there isn't any talk, but I find it really very interesting.
Yeah, it's...
But, you know, I mean, would he really do that?
Well, he may... I mean, people have... suggested that he was kind of Milli Vanilli, that he has been lip-syncing for Dick Cheney and Karl Rove all along. Maybe he really has been. Or maybe he's an android or something, and that's his control unit. That's his power pack.
Yeah, but, I mean, if he's an android like Data or something from Star Trek, I mean, he'd have all the stuff at his fingertips. He'd be pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's right. He's, well, you know, we're not quite there with
no,
the technology.
No, we're not there yet. You're right. We're more like the first Star Trek, the new one.
Yeah.
So. I don't know. I mean, you know, I want to believe that he didn't do it. And if he did, and this is all speculation based on a picture and we don't know what it is, but if he did, I don't see how he could possibly do it tonight because everyone's going to be looking.
Yeah. Well, but see, everyone, if he simply puts it someplace where it's not so conspicuous, if he clips it to the back of his pants, for example, or sticks it inside the back of his pants, and his coat flap covers that up. You know, they had this thing apparently taped to the middle of his back between his shoulder blades, and not only that, and maybe it has to be in close proximity to the ear to work. You know, if it's a relay transmitter, because they've got these super sophisticated ones that go way deep down inside the ear canal and they're invisible. And if that's the case, then maybe clipping it down on his pants wouldn't work. And that's why James Baker III, the lawyer who negotiated this stuff on behalf of the Republicans, and who is also defending the Saudi royal family and the Saudi kingdom against the 9/11 families who are suing them, argued so strongly that there had to be no cameras, no photographs from the back, showing the candidates from the back during the debate. And Fox ignored them. But maybe that's why that was put in there.
You know, I mean, there's so much that we don't know, because the fact is that we know nothing.
Well, we're trying to know something, you know. The problem
is... Yeah, we want to know.
You don't know what you don't know. You don't know what you do know. What you do know is that you've got to... I'm sorry, what are you pointing at?
Joe
Lockhart's on the line. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Oh, well, I think you should talk to Joe Lockhart.
Yeah, we should. In fact, you want to stick around and listen in?
I want to listen in because I want to hear you ask him the question.
Okay, great. Hang on just a second, Victoria.
Okay.
And we've got Joe Lockhart of the Kerry campaign on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Also on the line with you is Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service. We were talking with her just as you came on. Joe, have you seen this picture that is on Salon.com today that you can also see on C-SPAN of the box on the back of George W. Bush's coat from the last debate?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? You sort of came in and out on me.
Yeah, if during the debate that Bush had with Kerry, the last debate that Bush and Kerry had, there is a photo from the Fox News feed that you can see on C-SPAN that's shot from the back, where from his back, between his shoulder blades, under his coat, there's a box. And there are a lot of, and it's, this is not conspiracy nut stuff, you can actually see it on C-SPAN. And there's Salon.com did an article about it today, and there's all this speculation that's flying around about was somebody talking into his ear through this box. Is this anything you guys know about?
Well, listen, I've seen some of this stuff running around the Internet, and I guess the only thing I'd have to say to that, if there was someone talking to him, they should get a smarter person to talk to him next time. His answers weren't so good, whether they were his or somebody sitting behind the curtain.
There you go. Well said. So what do you expect is going to happen tonight, Joe?
Well, listen, I think it's a different format. We're going to talk to real voters as opposed to journalists, and I think John Kerry's looking forward to that. He does these town hall meetings 3 or 4 times a week all across the country, you know, sort of takes on all comers, whether they be Democrats or Republicans. So he's looking forward to it, and I think the president is too. I think it's probably a better format for the president. He likes things more informal. It'll be more informal. But the bottom line is they both got to talk about what their records are, what their plans are. And, I think it gives us an advantage. We've got these job numbers out today, another disappointing month.
Yeah.
It confirms that This president is the first one since Herbert Hoover to not create a single job in his first term. It's just more discouraging news, and I think more of an incentive for America to look at John Kerry and think it's time for a change.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that this discussion tonight is going to stray beyond purely economic domestic issues and get into domestic issues like the environment?
Yeah, listen, I think, half the debate will be on foreign policy, half on domestic policy. And it's going to go where the voters want it to go. There are issues that have not been touched in this campaign, like the environment. There are issues that we haven't spent enough time on, like health care. I mean, there's a health care crisis in this country. Middle-class people know about it. They don't need to be told how difficult it is and how expensive it's become. And these are things that John Kerry has been talking about out on the stump, and he really looks forward to sort of speaking directly to tens of millions of Americans, in this debate format.
Joe, how do you expect that George W. Bush is going to handle or is going to spin these poor job numbers and the massive number of unemployed people, of underemployed? Probably the biggest issue, the biggest scandal I see out there is the fact that people are competing with their children for the same jobs.
I think he's going to handle it. I was just walking through the press room here, and the DNC has very cleverly handed out these rose-colored glasses, 3D rose-colored glasses, because that's the way the president sees the world.
Yeah, that's great.
He's going to say everything's great. He's going to say we're making progress. He's going to say it's hard work, but we've rounded the corner. We've turned the corner. It'll be mission accomplished.
Yeah.
All of these are slogans and cliches, and they don't reflect what's really going on in the country. You have middle-class families who are working two jobs and falling further behind. And it is just an absolute challenge to the basic principles of what it's like to be an American, which is if you work hard and play by the rules, you'll get ahead. Too many people are falling behind under this president, and I think there's a real sense of momentum behind this idea that it's time to make a change.
Yeah, well said. I know you've got to go here, Joe. Before you do, Victoria Jones with Talk Radio News Service, did you have a question for Joe?
Yes. With regard to the WMD report that came out earlier this week and also Paul Bremer's op-ed today in the Washington Post, in which he seems to be saying that he didn't say what he said he did, the breakdown of the WMD report gets quite complicated, and I wonder whether Senator Kerry has any concerns that because President Bush seems to perhaps have already started spinning this, that he is going to be able to convince the American public that we went to war perhaps for the food for oil program?
Yeah, good question. And I would add to that, Joe, is it going to come out that Halliburton was among the companies scamming the food for oil program? I think we've lost Joe.
He's gone.
Yeah, yep. He just dropped. He must have been on a cell phone. I think he was on a cell phone. And those things are not always the very, very best. So, anyhow, good questions, though. Let me put that question to you, Victoria. Is there any word coming out from Washington, D.C.? Is there much discussion about this? I heard this mentioned on, I believe it was BBC News this morning, that in this report where they're talking about the Food for Oil program being manipulated by Saddam in order to hand money off to corporations that were helping him do his nefarious stuff, that the corporations in China, the corporations in France, corporations in Russia were named, the names of the American corporations were blacked out.
No, that's absolutely right.
And Halliburton is probably among them. We know that Halliburton did $78 million worth of business with Iraq while Dick Cheney was its CEO.
I mean, we've been told that the reason that the American companies are not being named is because of privacy reasons, which strikes me as the single most ludicrous thing I ever heard in my life. Why there should be privacy for people who have violated sanctions and God knows what else, I don't know, but that's what we're being told.
Yeah.
One of the things that's going on that people are talking about in Washington is they're going a step further than talking about the foreign companies, but talking about the close connections with their government, so that you have a scenario where Russia and Germany and France, for example, are being seen as all being in bed with Saddam Hussein, and that was a pretty good motivation for them not wanting to go to war.
Yeah, and that's the spin.
That's the spin, and, it's something that I don't think is totally refutable, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, they had an economic interest, but do you really think And do that anybody does? I mean, can think through the logic of that. Do you really think that any nation would put a couple of $1 billion in economic self-interest ahead of the possibility of being devastated by terrorist attacks? I mean, if these countries actually believed that Saddam Hussein represented a threat to them and other countries, they would have set aside their economic self-interest.
No, I don't. You see, I don't think that they... You see, that's why I think it's partially true. I don't think that they believed that he was the same threat that our administration apparently believed he was. I don't believe they thought he was. I also think that Germany has no intention of going to war against anybody again anytime soon if it can possibly help it.
Yeah.
And as much as we like to slam them for that, saying, well, we bailed them out, well, then we got what we wanted, didn't we? We turned them into pacifists.
Yeah, yeah. After two wars that they essentially started in the 20th
Germans
century.
Germans are no longer militaristic, and isn't that a wonderful thing?
Yeah.
Except when it doesn't suit us.
Yeah. But I think it really highlights the fact that all of these countries thought there were no weapons of mass destruction. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, thanks so much for being with us again
Thank
today.
Thank you.
Okay, good talking to you, Victoria. So, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Truth in broadcasting for a change. Stick around, we'll be right back. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight. And friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. No end in sight to work stoppage for thousands of San Francisco hotel workers. This week, hotel managers announced they'll keep employees locked out indefinitely. Over 1,400 workers at four downtown San Francisco hotels went on strike last week, vowing not to return to work for 2 weeks or until they receive a fair labor contract. In response, the San Francisco Hotel Multi-Employer Group locked out 2,600 non-striking workers at 10 other hotels.
Well, they're playing hardball because they're global corporations and they're used to getting their way, and they aren't used to having to sit down as equals across the bargaining table from people.
Mike Casey, president of Unite Here Local 2, said workers are attempting to protect their health and pension benefits, reduce workloads, and gain wage increases, despite fierce resistance from management.
We are not going to stand and bow to their hardball, heavy-handed tactics. We're not going to be intimidated by their approach here, and if they want to come back and bargain respectfully with us, then hopefully we'll get a deal down. But if they want to go at it with us and start this fight, then we'll show them, you know, what we're made of.
In a press call, John Wilhelm, president of the Unite Here Hospitality Division, said they're seeking a two-year deal to line up contract negotiations with the bulk of other major union hotel cities, including New York, Chicago, Toronto, Honolulu, and Boston.
If we're going to have effective bargaining in each of the hotel markets, we've got to figure out how to have a national dialogue on the issues that are the most important.
10,000 Unite Here casino employees in Atlantic City are also on strike, and Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. may soon join them if current negotiations fail. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Our automation system appears to have burped here today. 96,000 jobs added to the payrolls in September. Not quite what the administration was hoping for. It takes 150,000 jobs every month just to keep us at zero because of new people coming into the workplace. You know, our population is growing. And in fact, they downward revised last month's job estimates from to 128,000 from 144,000. And manufacturers last month, although 96,000 jobs were created in September, during that same month, the number of actual manufacturing jobs not only was not created, but we lost 18,000 good-paying manufacturing jobs in September. Is this going to come up tonight during the debates? It'd be interesting to find out. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Sean in Indianapolis is on the line. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, what's up? Hey, you were talking about the medical malpractice stuff. Out of my 329 surgeries, 200 of them were during the 90s, and I think that probably over half of those it's probably due. I lost my right arm because of something that went really, really wrong.
Ouch.
But we live in a state that used to have a doctor as a governor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nearly impossible to sue a doctor in Indiana, even for gross negligence.
That's a tragedy.
I don't want it to get that way over the whole country, which it sounds like what the conservatives are wanting to try and do.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing is they're using doctors, frankly. I mean, they're using the medical malpractice crisis.
Yep.
And the largest part of the crisis, frankly, is that the insurance companies had invested heavily in the stock market in the 1990s. And when the stock market crashed, the insurance companies ended up, you know, in the hole. But they're using this whole medical malpractice as a way of getting tort reform right across the board so that all these huge corporations that manufacture products or offer services will also be protected. The medical part of it is just a fig leaf. I mean, it's just this.
What's Perry's position on this? Do you know?
Well, Edwards talked about it during the debate the other night, and they said that, you know, if you want tort reform, that is, if you want reform of the legal system and abuse by lawyers, let's put in a three strikes and you're out, where if a lawyer, number one, lawyers have to submit to other lawyers a case to be determined that, yeah, this case is legitimate before they take it into a court and start tying up our legal system. And number two, if a lawyer files three frivolous cases or three cases that he loses big, boom, he's out. He can't do it anymore. In the meantime, we discover that corporations file lawsuits against persons five times more than human beings sue corporations. That's something they don't want to stop. That's not part of the tort reform agenda. Sean, thanks for the call. Good to hear
right,
from you.
Talk to you later.
Yep. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Thanks for listening today. Thanks to Louise for producing our program. Thanks to Ira for Gravatt for engineering it. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. To Mike Toth and to Ben Birch for our archives and White Rose Society and at TomHartman.com. To Jay for our theme music. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up from all over the planet. We've had folks in the chat room this week from several from Europe, from Asia. And thanks to you for listening. See you next week. And happy Friday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek.